Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks, 200 radio stations. Actually, it's more like 300. Anyway, a lot of stations all over the country. On Sunday, not to toot my horn or anything, on Sunday, October 14th, 2018, Indigenous Talk Show Host Day. This is episode 1532. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Slack. Slack is a collaboration hub for work to make sure the right people in your team are always in the loop. And key information is always at their fingertips. Learn more at slack.com. And by Carbonite. From customer data to disaster recovery and backup, automatically protect everything in the cloud with Carbonite. To learn more, visit carbonite.com. And by LastPass. Secure every password-protected entry point to your business. Join over 43,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today. Learn more at lastpass.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yeah, time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, you know, and all that stuff. Smartphones, smartwatches. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to call. Let me say that again. It's easy to remember. Think of a piano keyboard, right? 88 keys. So think of two pianos, and they've broken down, and you got to call Leo. 8888 Ask Leo. I guess Ask Leo would be better. 8888 Ask Leo. Call has too many letters. That's 888-827-5536. You can call us Anytime, and ask questions. Well, not anytime. Anytime while I'm here. I get. What happens if they call and I'm not here? Just go bap, bap, bap. Yeah, makes a funny sound. The trunk is turned off. There's no answering machine. Can you imagine if there were an answering machine? I know in email alone, I get dozens of emails every day. But I can't figure this. And I feel bad. I'm sorry. I can't really answer all those emails. And if it had an answering machine, it'd be even crazier. It just shows you the state of tech support in this business, in this crazy consumer electronics business is so bad that people don't, you know, maybe they call and ask for help from the company, but most often they go, I know that's not going to work. I don't want to stay on hold for an hour. Of course, I'm going to keep you on hold for an hour, too. So, 88, maybe not. 8888 Ask Leah. Have you seen these scooters? I saw them first in Santa Monica. They were all over the place. What were the ones I saw in Santa Monica? Were they lime? I can't remember. They were, you use your phone. They have a little computer screen on them. It's kind of like Uber, but they're electric scooters. So, you use your phone. You tap the scooter. You drive it to where you want, you leave it, and you go on with your day, which is kind of an interesting idea, except that people just, they're strewn all over the place. People just let them, leave them everywhere. Sometimes you've got gaggles of scooters, and then there's the issue of charging the scooters, and there's actually, I think in Santa Monica, quite an underground economy of because the scooter company will pay you to charge the scooters for them. So there's a community of people who, you know, high school kids who gather scooters up and plug them in. It's kind of a mess. San Francisco, there was the next big city that, perfect city for scooters, right? Hard to get around. Really, you don't want to drive in San Francisco if you can avoid it. Parking's very expensive. If you could park, you know, on the outskirts and then scooter in, or take the train or bus in, scooter in, that would be pretty cool. And it was the Wild West for a bit. A bunch of different scooter companies came in and dumped their scooters on the sidewalks. It was a mess. I guess it's the same problem in San Jose. Burke in our office is saying he was there 2 weeks ago. Scooters are everywhere. Crosswalks everywhere. So San Francisco decided we can't let this scooter go unfended. We could have homeless people all over the street. No, that's no problem. But we don't want scooters all over the street. So they had a hearing and said, you know, we're going to pick two. We're going to pick two. Uber, by the way, is in the scooter business. I think Lyft is in the scooter business. Everybody who does this kind of thing says Bird was the one in Santa Monica, right? Yeah, I think that was it. And Uber has Lime. That's one of them. They're all over the place. I feel like it's something for kids, not kids, but people under a certain youth, under, say, I don't know, would you say 25, 30, under 30. Young people, maybe, I don't know, a 29-year-old on a scooter is kind of silly. Under 25, maybe 18 and under. But it's a great way to get around. I understand that. And kids are really good at scooters because they grew up with those Razor scooters. My only experience with a Razor scooter is when I got one for my son when he was a little boy and immediately tumbled head over heel because it hit a pothole and I'm right over the handlebars. I never did that again. So I'm a little reluctant. I like Segways. I've ridden the Segway, but no city's going to have Segways. They're too expensive. Two scooters are fairly cheap. Anyway, San Francisco had a hearing and decided on two scooter companies, Skip and Scoot. They said, we're going to give permits to Skip and Scoot, but none of the resties. The resties scram because we don't. And you know what? I think that makes sense. Cities do that with taxis too, right? They say there's a certain number of taxis allowed in town. Otherwise, the streets would be filled with taxis and you wouldn't be able to get around. And I think if you let any scooter company come in, you wouldn't be able to walk anywhere because there'd be scooters everywhere on the ground. And Lime is upset. They literally went to court asking a judge for a temporary restraining order. This is what happens, you know, if you've got Uber money behind you. They Judge, Your Honor, how could it be that they did not pick us? So Skip and Scoot are, by the way, the judge said no. No, it's not. The court denied Lime its request for a temporary restraining order. Permits are issuing tomorrow, on Monday. The San Francisco Metropolitan Transit Agency is going to allow this. And the court says we're not going to stop it. San Franciscans says the SFMTA deserves scooter services that are safe, equitable, and accountable. It is a pilot program. I mean, the theory is if this all goes well, maybe more scooters will be allowed. But anywhere that where scooters are allowed to proliferate, it's kind of like rabbits. If there's they're just everywhere. They're all over the place. Right? Mimu in our chat room says, if scooters are outlawed, only outlaws will have scooters. That's true, yeah. I see a bank gang hopping on the scooters after their robbery and scooting off. Google got in a little bit of trouble. I'm actually curious what you think of all of this. Google got dinged by the Wall Street Journal earlier this week. The Journal had found emails from Google executives saying there was a flaw in Google Plus, their social network, uncovered last spring that allowed third-party programs to access your private information on your Google Plus profile. This is not your Google information. This is just your Google Plus profile. And mostly that includes, you know, name, address, phone number, websites that you own, stuff like that. It's not Google. Remember the big push to say everybody should set up a Google Plus profile? This will be your... I bought into it. This is my profile on the web. You know, this is where people can find me and all that stuff. And I put everything I could think of in there, including a couple of things I kept private. Private, as I remember, meant that only friends and family, you know, could see it. So I put my home address and my real phone number, you know, the one I use privately, my private cell number in there, because I want friends and family to have it. But I didn't, and apparently that was exposed. Google says, now this is important, because originally in the Wall Street Journal article, they said it was a breach. So what a breach means is bad guys got in and got data. Google says, in fact, that did not happen. No bad guys, as far as we can tell, got in. There was no data released, and we fixed it in the spring. And that's that. What Google did not do is tell anybody about that. So here's my question to you. If there's a flaw, let's say in Microsoft Windows, a bug that let bad guys get in. Is it Microsoft's obligation to tell the world? There was a flaw, but we fixed it. If Apple had a problem with Mac OS that, or your iPhone that allowed somebody to get access to it and they fixed it, are they obligated to tell the world, hey? I don't think so. In fact, I don't think that's the common practice. If there's a breach, if data is leaked, yes. Right? We all agree that. When a company like Equifax leaks 14 million customer records, Equifax has a duty to inform because you're at risk and you need to be able to do something about it. And in fact, that's what the General Data Protection Regulation in Europe requires, that companies, they say, within 72 hours have to reveal a breach. And so that's the important difference between a breach and a bug. Bugs happen. breaches mean that the bug was used by malicious actors. And as far, and Google says, again, as far as we can tell, although they don't have a perfect record of it, that maybe that's the key. Maybe it was leaked and people should know about it. Anyway, people know now. Google's ultimate response, and it's almost like I'm going to take my ball and go home. They put out a blog post this week, said, well, okay, we're just going to close Google Plus. So what? So in August of next year, Google Plus will go away. So there, Wall Street Journal. Hope you're happy now. 8888-ASK-LEO, our website, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. We will call right now. Kim Schaffer's standing by. Operator is standing by. And we'll get you calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Kim Schaffer is a friend of mine. Hello, Kim.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's the morning, and it's time to talk on the radio. Do you ever say that when you get out, you hop out of bed on a weekend? I'm so excited to be going to my radio job.
I am.
Radio. I love radio. You know, I was just listening the other day to a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You know what those are, right?
Nope.
No idea. And it was fun because, actually, you know what it was? It was the Bob Newhart. Bob Newhart has a podcast called Hello, Bob.
He's still alive?
That's the first thing people say. Then when Bob says yes. And he interviews comics, mostly younger than him. And it's kind of fun. And he was talking to Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, yeah.
Who started in radio, as did Newhart. They both started in radio. And Kimmel's funny because he says, you know, really, radio's back. Podcasts are just the same thing. They're radio.
They are.
They kind of are, right?
They are. And, you know, commercial-free, maybe.
No, not my podcast, baby. They're loaded.
Just depends.
No, we don't load them. But we do have commercials. Because you have a choice, really. You can. There's three things you can do if you're a podcaster. You can give your work away and just say, I'm doing it for fun. Right. Most podcasters, that's the case. You can say, I'm going to charge people for it.
And then there's no commercials.
And right. I tried that at first with my podcast, but people just really don't want to pay for stuff, especially a podcast.
Right.
You're used to getting radio free, why'd you?
Yeah,
people like radio and the ads support it. Why not try that? And that actually has worked pretty well for our, you know, just TWIT, the podcast network I started in 2005.
Yep.
13 years ago, still around, still doing great.
Yep.
So, it's great because I could do the radio show on the weekends, but I had to have something to do Monday through Friday.
Mm-hmm. No, I love doing this because yeah. It's my only...
it's fun.
It's my only radio connection anymore, so... Aww.
Well, our old mentor and boss is back.
He's back. I know. I sent him a message last Friday when I heard...
Our great affiliate in San Francisco. Yeah, okay, so
the whole of the subject was WTF.
Yeah. Jack Swanson is a great guy. Hi, Jack.
Hi,
if you're listening.
And
Jack.
Today is the 7-year anniversary of when they blew him out out the first time, so.
Radio's funny that way.
I wish today was his first day back.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be hysterical?
I'm back.
Victory 7 years later, I'm back.
I know. I feel like they must have backed the Brinks truck up to get him back because after getting blown out like that, I don't think I'd be going back to the same company.
I want to beg Jack not to cancel this show.
Yeah. Well, I'll do it for you.
Will you please? I'll give you a bobblehead.
I am going to pay him a visit very soon.
He's a great guy. It's really great to have him back.
Yeah.
Who should I talk to on the radio here?
I'm going to go with Paul in Columbus, Ohio, because I think you can help him spend some money, and I know how much you like doing that, especially when it comes to camera lenses.
Oh, man, I spend way too much money.
Yes.
It does not make me a better photographer. That's the sad thing. I keep hoping, though. Yeah. Hi, Paul, Columbus, Ohio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Do you like, is photography your hobby?
Unfortunately, not so much. I'm visually impaired. I talked to you several times before, but it's my daughter's camera, and I'm trying to help her.
Oh, that's great.
She bought a Sony Alpha 6000.
Excellent camera. That's the one I gave my son for his high school graduation, Lou, these many years ago.
Yeah, it came with two lenses.
Yeah.
And she dropped one of them.
Oh, nuts.
Take one off or whatever, and it got some sand in it. So she initially tried to use it, thinking it was clear and heard the noise and whatever, and isn't. But
Sony, by the way, take it to a Sony Repair Depot. It's very common. People often, in fact, on a regular basis, like every few years, will get their lenses tuned up. And they'll literally take it apart, clean it out, put it back together, and lubricate it if it needs to be.
Okay, well, the one place she's in Denver, and the place she sent it to or has a local repair, I don't think it's not Sony, it's the camera shop.
No.
You want $141.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. It probably is expensive.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, she could buy a new one on Amazon for $140.
Oh, brand new of the same kind or a different kind?
Well, supposedly. That's what I want to ask you. She says there's a listing there. It says it matches that camera. It says it's bulk packaged. And it's an international lens.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what the heck they mean by an international lens.
This is a real issue in the camera world. When you buy a camera, generally I will say get it from an authorized reseller. You know, somebody Sony authorizes. Same with lenses. But in this case, what the difference is, you're buying the same lens, but it's going to be kind of gray market, which means no warranty, basically. So. But nobody really uses warranties on these things anyway. So so no repairs, no warranties. I would say with a camera, don't, because the body often, that's the kind of thing, like a computer, you want to be able to get repaired. A lens, maybe not so much. How much difference in price is it?
No, it's virtually the same price to have the original one repaired. And she's only had it for, like 8-9 months. So,
as long as you feel like the seller is legit, and I've bought...
Well, it's Amazon.
But it's not Amazon. So this is another big issue. Always look on Amazon, because more than half of the stuff sold on Amazon is not sold by Amazon. Amazon acts as a fulfillment company for third parties, and most of the stuff on Amazon is not sold by Amazon. So look carefully and see if it's sold by Amazon and... shipped by Amazon. You want both. It won't be if it's European with no warranty. It almost certainly will not be from Amazon. But check. And then you'll see who the vendor's name is on the listing. By the way, every time you refresh the listing, it might change. That's not unusual as well. Navigating Amazon has gotten a little tricky because it's not all Amazon. Sony sells, for instance, directly on Amazon. Amazon fulfills. So... understand, when you look at the listing, you're going to see who it's sold by. That's who's actually selling it to you and who it's fulfilled by. Sometimes it's Amazon, sometimes not. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think in general, I think it's fine as long as it's a reputable company.
It's a zoom, and it's 16 millimeters to like 50. And it's like but the f-stop is only like 3.5 to 5.6, which seemed pretty weak to me for that kind of a lens. Is that pretty mediocre?
Yeah, that's why it's inexpensive. So you really pay for faster lenses. And so I'm looking right now, Amazon's Choice, it even says, bulk packaging by Sony, must be this one. It's the OSS Alpha E-mount retractable zoom lens. Yeah, this looks like it's actually sell. Oh yeah, see it, over on the right, ships from and sold by, and then on mine it says Phoenix Photo. Although if you refresh it, it might say ships from and sold by somebody else. So what you want to do is look at the, look and see if that company's reliable. What they did is it's just not with. It'll be without warranty. But I'm looking at the reviews. If it's the one from Phoenix Photo, I'm looking at the reviews, and the reviews are pretty good. So it's kind of like buying on eBay a little bit. The thing to understand when you're buying bulk packaging is it's just not – usually it's not going to be – and that's $141, so I think this is the one. It's just not going to be a full warranty. And you might even – in the reviews, you might even see more information about that. Sometimes people
say. Is it actually the Sony lens or is it an off-brand?
Yeah, it's a Sony lens.
It is a Sony lens.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you could buy a little bit better to get a better f-stop on that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the A6000 has lots of lenses that work. The problem is, of course, the better the lens, the more expensive it's going to be.
Yeah, no, I certainly understand that.
Yeah.
But if she's got to buy a new one, if you could spend 50 and get something better, I would kind of like it.
This is not a bad – this is really a landscape lens where you're outside. So the f-stop doesn't matter so much. And often in a less expensive lens, you don't want to shoot it wide open anyway because the optics aren't great. So I would say this is probably fine. I'm looking at the picture of the lens to see if it says Sony on it. Yes, it does. Sony Corp. SELP 1650. So, it's a Sony lens. That's a reasonable price for that lens, frankly.
Is that camera, by the way, is that like a full frame or a half frame, or what size is the sensor?
I think it's APS-C. APS-C, I think.
Which is a decent size?
Yeah. So it's the smallest. The smallest sizes, of course, are the point and shoots. The very good point and shoots will have a 1-inch sensor. The next step up is Micro Four Thirds. The next step up from that is APS-C. APS-C is the last step before full frame, 35.
Full frame, great.
So APS-C is very good. It's for somebody who's learning photography, a young person, doesn't have a lot of money, it's a great choice. That's why I gave it to my son.
Yeah, she had a Canon before, but that was several years old, and she's trying to get into some different stuff with the photography. It's got amazing features. I was really surprised.
Oh, yeah, no. Sony is kind of the king these days.
Yeah, you know, we have an older one. We got 6 years ago. We took to Europe for the first time then and took it just last week. We were in Paris for a week. It was great.
Oh. The city of light.
We've got the scooter issue in Columbus. They banned them for a little bit because they just came in and dumped them. They were didn't ask the city or anything. They didn't dump them. So finally, there was an uproar by a lot of people, and they banned them temporarily, at least until they got regulations, which we do now have. And they've got some pretty good restrictions on them. And the company came. I'm a member of a disability assistance type organization with the mayor's office. And we really were clamoring at them because, anyway, they had somebody come in from Bird and Lime both, and they seemed to be pretty concerned about PR. So
they think they're the next Uber.
Yeah.
Hey, I got to run. It's great to talk to you. Thanks. Thank you. Have a good one.
You
Bye,
too.
Paul. Our show today, in fact, much of the Twit Network brought to you by Slack. That's the communication tool we've settled on for all the work we do. Slack is fantastic. It looks like a messenger program, but it's so much more. It's really a collaboration hub for work, whatever you do. With Slack, the right people in your team are kept in the loop. The information you need is always at your fingertips, always at their fingertips. It's actually better than email. You don't have to spend time digging through your email to find something, because with Slack, we have rooms for every show. We have rooms for every function in the company, for HR, for product reviews, for editorial. It's all there, organized. You can search it easily. It's completely secure. And even better, it integrates with everything we use. And that was a key feature for us. We had to have integration not only with Google Docs, but some of the geeky things we use, like Atlassian's Jira and Confluence and Salesforce and Zendesk. And it works with all. In fact, it works with one. Slack is so dominant in the market these days. It works with everything, more than 1,000 apps. It's fun to use. And I don't want to diminish the importance of that. Your employees, my team, we love using it. When I told them we're going to Slack, everybody was jumping up and down. Megan and Jason liked Slack so much, they had their own little Slack back channel for their show, Tech News Weekly, because they just wanted to have it. Well, now the whole company's using it. And, of course, Slack works everywhere. There's Slack for every browser. There's Slack for every mobile device, iOS and Android. So you pick up where you left off no matter where you are. But don't worry, you're not always on with Slack. You can set downtimes, off times, where you won't be bothered by Slack. And I like that, too. They have a real... It's a great company with a real sense of what works and what doesn't work in business. With Slack, your team is better connected, and you'll love it too. Learn more at slack.com, S-L-A-C-K, slack.com. He's been everywhere, friends. He's Johnny Jett, our traveling guy. Johnny's on a week line from far, far away right now. Hello, John.
How you doing, Leo? How's it sound?
Actually, sounds good. You're not that far away, I gather. Where are you?
I'm in London, England, and I'm renting an apartment. And I guess I am not by the box. You know, my wife and son are upstairs sleeping, and I didn't have the heart of kicking them out of the bed. So I'm downstairs trying to be quiet.
So you're on the phone as opposed to on the Wi-Fi.
No, I'm Skype audio. No, I'm doing it through the computer.
Oh, nice. All right.
Sounds
very nice. So what brings you to London, Johnny?
You know, we were in Bermuda for the Family Travel Association conference, which is a small conference last week. Actually, which is something I wanted to bring up real quick. The keynote speaker was one of the most amazing humans I've ever seen. And he really, you should have him on your show because he needs your tech help. His name's Gordon Hartman. And actually, Time Magazine called the place that he created one of the world's 100 greatest places.
I want to go there right now. What is it?
Well, it's called Morgan's Wonderland in San Antonio. His daughter has special needs, and he was on vacation about 20 years ago. He's a wealthy man. He retired, and he was on vacation with his daughter and who has special needs, and she was playing in a pool with some kids. And when her daughter tried to play catch with the kids, they just grabbed the ball and got out. And he said he just couldn't take that look on her face of disappointment. So he decided that there was no place in the world that had a place for people with special needs and who don't to come together. So he created this water park, $36 million in San Antonio.
Oh,
and
so
it's
cool.
12% of the population has special needs in America. That's one out of three people.
Oh, yeah.
And so now what their big thing was that, you know, for kids who are in a wheelchair that's powered by either electric or battery, or they have a breathing machine, they could never get it wet. So they had to figure out how to create a wheelchair that would work.
Wheelchair. Oh my God.
So they did it
and they did it
by using compressed air.
Wow.
And now where they need your help is they're trying to build a camp for with a zip line, and they're having a hard time right now trying to figure out how they can do a zip line with kids in wheelchairs with breathing apparatuses and everything like that.
That is so cool.
But you got to watch this video. I'm creating a post right now. Time Magazine, actually not Time Magazine. Time Magazine named one of the world's greatest places, but New York Times did an amazing video on it, and I'll tweet it or I'll put it in the chat room, but. This guy is amazing. He really – the guy
That's
should run
so
for
cool.
president of the United States.
Good
but
for
anyway,
him.
If anyone has any advice on that, that would be great.
Advice on what?
On how to figure out how to get kids with wheelchairs up on a zip line.
Oh, a zip That's line. Where, oh, that.
Yeah.
Well, they're pretty – sounds they like did. They're pretty good because they figured out how to get them on a water slide. Wow. A zip
yeah.
line. Would they, you don't need exactly. to take the wheelchair on the zip line, or do you?
I think you do.
So you want to take the chair with them?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Huh.
Very.
Huh.
So
what a
if you can figure
idea.
That out.
That is such a neat idea. Morgan's it Wonderland really in San Antonio, Texas. For kids
I just
with
put it in the chat
needs.
Room. The
yeah.
Time Magazine one.
Yeah, really neat.
And then you got to look at the New York Times video. But anyway, so then because we were so close to London, 6-hour flight, we came over here to see Natalie's family. I just said, I can work anywhere I am. I'm fortunate. So we flew British Airways. They have a nonstop flight 6 hours. There are only 65 people on our 777. So it was like a private
jet. I love it because then you can spread out, huh?
Oh, my God. It was amazing.
Jack literally gets his own row.
Yeah. Basically, he did.
That's awesome.
And so anyway, here's another website for you. This is if you want to be treated like a celebrity. I don't know if you've ever seen celebrities go through airports, but I see it all the time at LA. When they depart, when they transfer, or when they arrive, they just get whisked through. And so now I figured out how they do it. A company approached me and they said, try it out. And I did. It's called Blacklane Pass.
Blacklane Pass.
So Blacklane, I talked about them before because they do a car service, real good car service. But now they have this pass where they do in 500 airports worldwide, they will escort you. So it was perfect for my mother-in-law because my mother-in-law was meeting us in London, but she was flying into Heathrow. We were flying to Gatwick. And she's a little bit of a nervous traveler. So I arranged for her to be – for $100, someone was waiting the moment she stepped off the plane.
So it's like Clear, but you don't have to sign up ahead of time.
No, Clear is different. Clear is for security in certain airports. This is – so when she landed in London, literally when they opened up the door, there was a person there holding a sign with her name.
Nice.
They grabbed her bags. They walked her through. They cut the line for immigration, so she didn't have to wait an hour in immigration lines.
How do they do that? They got to deal with a customs and border?
Exactly.
Wow.
And then they get your bags, and then they go through customs – and then they put you in a car. If you order a car, you can order a car through Blacklane or wherever. You can, whatever transportation you want. You can take a bus, but they'll put you on there. And she was like, when we arrived, she's like, that was the best thing ever. She goes, I've been celebritized. I never did it. And so Natalie and I did it as well. And again, so it's perfect for people who are either nervous or business travelers who don't want to.
I would do this for my mom. She does not want to fly. She's 85 years old. She doesn't want to fly. And her real fear is that confusion. Once you're on the plane, it's fine. It's the confusion getting on and off. She's afraid of getting lost or whatever. So this would be a great thing.
Oh, yeah. A couple of years ago, I had my dad fly from L.A. He met me in Budapest. And he had to go L.A., London, Budapest. And I wish this was available or I knew about it because I was so worried about him
getting lost in London. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I honestly
and Heathrow, I get lost in Heathrow. It's a nightmare.
Yes. And so anyway, this is a perfect thing for business travelers, for families. The price differs, but it's usually around $100 per person. So it was $100 for my mother-in-law for that. You know, for their rivals, which was well worth it. I mean, just for the peace of mind.
You know, I agree, and I love this. It's starting to bug me a little bit, though, that if you've got money, you can buy your way to the front of the line in so many places.
Well, that's true.
And it kind of bugs me. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand. But
I guess that's the world it's called capitalism, kids. And
but what I like about it is that before it used to just be for celebrities. If you were a celebrity, you could get it.
Well, as a celebrity, I just resent it that they're letting people buy their way into that now.
Well, the celebrities might resent that, but actually, as someone who's not a celebrity, I'm like,
what
hey,
do you mean? Now you're Johnny Jett.
Yes. Well, you know.
One of the most embarrassing things that ever happened to me, I was backstage at a Steve Martin concert and with other people, and Steve comes out, and he's saying hi, and he says, hey, everybody, look over there. It's the tech guy.
Awesome.
And everybody went, huh?
You got to love that.
So embarrassing. No, it was like, I wanted to hide about? In the corner.
Oh, man. That's what I wish that my
it's
old girlfriend was like.
Everybody said, who's that? We want to see you, Steve. We're not here for whoever that is.
No.
So $100 and you get skip the line, $100 per person. It says 500 airports. That sounds like a lot. Is that every airport? It's almost every airport.
Almost every airport. I mean, we had it in Bermuda, London. I mean, L.A., all the major airports.
I would
you'll
do that in London. So, but it's per airport, right? So if.
Yes.
Yeah.
So actually,
so
I
really add up.
I also paid the $100 for her for Toronto because she arrived in Toronto. And so, you know, I didn't want her to deal with it. So they, you know. Escorted her to the lounge through the security. Again, you cut the line, and so you can have it on arrivals, transfers, or when you're departing.
So, what are you doing? You're going out to see the world and going out to see London. What are you going to do tonight? Anything fun?
Well, it's a 7:41 here, and right now, I guess the Seattle and Raiders are playing.
You're going to go watch a ball game.
No,
good actually, luck finding that on the hotel. TV.
No, actually, I'm in an apartment. Actually,
oh.
so I rent an apartment from LondonPerfect.com. Nice. So this is luxury apartments all around. Actually, there's, I think they have like six different cities.
I love London. Well, have a great time. Love to you and the kids and the fam. And we'll talk to you next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you, Leo.
So tell me again what you're doing. I know what you're doing in Bermuda. What are you doing in London?
Honestly, we're here just so Jack can meet his relatives. Natalie has a lot of aunts here.
Oh.
So yesterday
is Natalie British?
Her parents are from Guyana.
Oh.
But they lived in Britain. And then my mother-in-law has a few aunts or siblings who live here. And so she has tons of cousins. So they had a big gathering yesterday to meet Jack.
Nice.
And so anyway, that's really why we're here. And just to, you know.
I love London. How long are you going to be there?
Just a few more days.
But you got an apartment just because it's more convenient probably, right?
Yeah, actually, I'll tell you about it next week. But you'll love these places because they're all like.
Fancy.
Well, not just fancy.
This is the new thing. It's like the next generation of Airbnb. I know there's one. You stayed at one in Paris, too, Paris, right?
A few years ago.
I got to get the name of that Paris one because Lisa loves it.
It's Paris Perfect.
There's London Perfect and Paris Perfect.
Yeah, and there's Rome Perfect. I think there's Amalfi Perfect. I got Bali Perfect.
Oh, this is nice to know about. It's the perfect family.
Yeah. So you can check it out. We can. I'll maybe have some pictures or something.
Okay, cool. Well, I know the place you stayed at Paris was amazing.
Oh, yeah. That was like the incredible view.
Yeah.
Really nice. Anyway, this is a great place, too.
So they have Provence, Normandy, London, Rome, Florence, Tuscany, and Bali. Wow.
Yeah.
I actually would like to do that in Florence because Lisa wants to see more Italy. And if you stayed near Florence...
Well, that was the idea. We almost went to Italy because I have relatives in Ischia, and nice. I wanted to go introduce Jack to our cousins there. But you know, it was just like too much travel. We've been on a long trip. We've been in Barbados, Florida, New York, jeez, Connecticut, Toronto, Bermuda. Now we're in London.
Well, here's a little place for 700 euros a week. That's not bad. In the Duomo district of Florence, that's kind of cool. I like that idea.
All right. Well, do you want me to talk about this on air next week?
Yeah.
Or let me get some.
Well, whatever you want. You know what?
All right, well,
it's your show. Will you be home next week or?
I can't tell you. I'll be somewhere.
You'll be riding a Lime scooter.
No, I won't be riding a Lime. Although I met the co-founder at a conference not too long ago.
Oh, interesting. We were talking about this before because San Francisco Lime was pissed because San Francisco did not pick Lime as one of the two scooter companies in town. So they sued. They wanted a restraining order. And they lost in court today or yesterday.
But they're not in San Francisco anymore.
No, they got booted.
Wow, I did not know that.
They were pissed. Well, what San Francisco finally did, and I think everybody's going to do this, is say, look, we can't just have everybody come in here and dump scooters. We're going to pick two companies.
It was Bird? Bird was
no,
one of them.
Bird did not get picked either. It was two I'd never heard of. It was like Skip and Strut. It was something strange. And
that's
Lime
shocking.
Sued. Lime said no, because Lime has Uber money. So right. Lime sued and lost. The judge says, what are you talking about? Get out of here. They wanted to, because tomorrow's the day. So they went
to court. I haven't seen them here in London, but you know, Uber's back up and running. And they actually said Uber never shut down. They just lost their license.
Right.
So
right.
It was interesting.
So it's the two that won are Skip and Scoot.
Okay.
But it's just a pilot program. It may be that they add more in time. I think the real issue is until the city council stepped in, it was just the place was littered with scooters, kind of like Santa Monica.
Yeah, I saw that in Santa Monica. They even have an Instagram where they were like, vandalizing them.
Yes. All right.
Throwing them off the pier.
Gotta
I'll
run,
talk
John.
To you later.
Have
Take
a good
care.
One. Have fun in Thanks. London. Good luck getting Thanks. The game. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. You want to get some tech help? You want to talk about tech issues? You want to tell the world about something great you found? That's the number, 888-827-5536. Website is techguylabs.com. That's free, no sign up. And it has all the information from the show there. Dave in Binghamton, New York. Hey, Dave.
Hey, good morning, Leo.
Good morning. Welcome. Or good afternoon for you. Yeah, welcome.
Yes. Thank you for the show. And earlier when you guys were talking about the, getting back into radio, it reminded me I just started back in radio because I missed a little bit on our local campus radio station just a few weeks ago. So it's definitely a...
At SUNY Binghamton?
Yes.
You know, that's how I got started in radio. I never... Be careful, because you get the bug, and then you never can never stop. It's the greatest medium ever, because it's just people talking.
Yeah, that's very true. And what's great about, you know, I started in commercial, and now the campus, well, I guess I really started down on campus in Pittsburgh, but then I worked a little bit in commercial radio here, and I just wanted to get back on. But what's cool about that the station that I just started on now is it's Freeform. So whatever DJs want to play.
I love that.
Whatever the format.
I miss those days. Yeah. WHRW.
That it is. Yeah, it's a great, great station to listen to. You never know what you're going to hear.
Awesome.
But I was calling because I'm trying to replace my 2009 Airport Extreme.
Yes. And it's time.
And I'm looking at it. Oh, yeah. It's definitely time. And I was thinking about, you know, getting one of the discontinued Airport Extremes, the more with the AC, but I'm thinking, how about future-proof by going to a mesh?
Yes.
However,
strongly encourage you to do this. When Apple was making these Wi-Fi devices, and they've stopped, by the way, these were the king of the hill. They were also priced that way. They were around $200. Nowadays, you go into the router store, and everything's $200 and up. But I don't think that's necessary. You can get cheap routers, but I think the market has shown that they don't want cheap routers because they're insecure, they don't get updated regularly, and they don't have the features people want. They just don't work well. So you're right to start looking at mesh. That's the new hotness in routers. And the reason mesh is a good idea, it's not necessary in a small apartment. You don't need mesh. Although you might want to get a mesh base station for a small place. That's actually what I set my daughter up with, because then when you move to a bigger place, you just add units to expand as you go. And the nice thing about all of the mesh routers, whether you only have one unit or the normal three or four units, is they've set a new standard for security. They update regularly. They often have more features. They do things to improve your connectivity over time as they observe what you're doing. All of these things make it a better Wi-Fi experience for most people. There is one downside on mesh, and Plume started it. They started charging you a yearly subscription or a monthly fee. And the idea is, well, look, we want to keep this up to date. We want to keep developing it. We want to keep improving it. And that's the problem, right? When you bought a $40 Linksys router, Linksys just wiped their hands and said, thanks, good luck, have fun, bye. And so I think it's not inappropriate for a router company to say, look, we have additional features you can pay for. Eero, one of our sponsors, does that as well. And I pay for the Eero Plus. It's $99 and you get a lot of extra stuff, including a password manager, a VPN. You get content filtering. You get ad blocking. Mm-hmm. And you get regular updates. So that's something to be aware of. Mesh routers cost more, basically, both initially and over time. On the other hand, they really do make a difference. How big is the space?
It's a 1,400 square foot house.
Okay, so that's not huge. In fact, most base stations will cover that easily, a single base station.
Yeah, the question or the concern that I have, though, is like with the Airport Extreme software, you can set two networks, one for the 2.4 and one for the 5.
Yes.
And I've noticed comments in some of the reviews of the mesh systems is that while it's still broadcast in both, you can set a separate network for the 5 gigahertz.
The idea behind mesh is we'll do it. We'll take it from here. And I have to say, in most cases, unless you really know what you're doing, that's the best way to do it. There's a lot of voodoo that people can think. They go, oh, I'm going to choose the channel. I'm going to choose the frequency. I'm going to make it better. And they screw things up. So unless you're a network expert.
A Ring doorbell.
Yeah.
It says you need to do it at a 2.4, so you have to choose that.
Well, the Ring should automatically. A good IoT device, and will not all of them do this, but will know that, oh, that's the 2.4, and be on the 2.4. Mm-hmm. And actually, with the mesh, I don't think you're going to have a problem with that. It can sometimes be a problem on some poorly designed IoT stuff where they see two signals. a 5 gigahertz and a 2.4, and they choose the wrong one. They can't handle it. I've had that happen with a device, and then you just have to reset the device and choose the other one. But in a way, that's more likely if you have two routers at one router at two different frequencies, you might choose the wrong one. Mm-hmm. So I use a ring with ear. Do I use a Plume or Eero? I have both Plume and Eero at home. I use the ring with the Eero, and no problem.
Okay.
I didn't do anything special. It just did it automatically.
Right, and then a Wemo plug. I think it's Wemo. I forget which one I actually have, or TP-Link one.
There have been problems with Wemos and some Wi-Fi routers, so you should always make sure that you choose a router that works best or works well with your IoT devices. And Wemo, I know, has had problems. I can't remember with which ones. I would, for the size place you have, I think, what's nice now is some of the old school router companies like Asus and Netgear are doing, Linksys are doing, they have, in the case of Netgear and Linksys, they have mesh routers, but they're doing, even in their regular, standalone single Wi-Fi access points, they have a lot of mesh features. So, you might look at $200 from Amazon, the Netgear Nighthawk. That's the wire cutter's pick for a dual band 3-stream 802.11 AC router. It's actually a 185. It's a little less than the old Airport Extreme, and I would say it's very comparable to it. And I think they're going to keep that up to date. If you want a mesh, I love Eero. I love the extra features of Eero Plus. Plume is good for certain things. I use it generally for my IoT devices because Eero is very good at kind of small, focused Wi-Fi. And then another really good choice is the Synology RT2600. I think is a really, it's $200, a really nice router. And Synology has demonstrated that they will keep the software up to date. They do network attached storage devices as well, and they really seem committed to keeping stuff up to date. That's job one right now for a router. Router is your first line of defense against the bad guys outside.
True.
So awesome. Synology, Netgear. If you want a mesh, I love the Eero. You couldn't do better than Eero, I think.
Okay, so develop that. Apple.
I would not do the Velop. That's what the Apple's selling, and I do not like that. That's the Linksys.
Yeah.
I do not like that particularly. I don't actually like Google's Wi-Fi either. I do not. I'll tell you what I don't like. I do not like the Ubiquiti Amplify. But there are plenty of other choices. Netgear's Orbi is really great. If you want super speed, that's the best one speed-wise. I would say Plume, Orbi. Plume's expensive in a weird way because even though the individual units are cheap, you are supposed to get one for every room. So,
and is it also that you said they have that subscription or the?
And they have, and there's a yearly or monthly subscription, yeah, which is not great either. So take a look at Eero. You don't have to buy Eero Plus; it's $99 a year. I found it well worth it given all the features of it. These new routers will be better. You really will get better Wi-Fi, even than the cream of the crop, Apple Airport Extreme. And that's discontinued, so I don't recommend getting another one of those. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Good to see you. Welcome, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. You know, all the stuff with chips in them. 888-ASK-LEOS. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. It's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still reach us. Skype reaches all over the world. And if you have a Skype Out account, you have to pay a little extra for that, right? But you can use – that's so you can call regular phones with Skype Out. But you won't use any of your minutes or your pennies calling us because it's toll-free. 888-827-5536. Website, techguylabs.com. I mention that because sometimes you're driving around, you're listening to the show, and I say something, and you say, oh, I got to write that down, and then I don't want you to do that because that's dangerous. So here's what we do. We put everything that I say up on the website, techguylabs.com, and then we give you free access to it. There's no charge, no subscription, no sign-up even. techguylabs.com. In fact, of course, James DeRuvo is writing this down as I talk. And but then we, after the fact, after the show's aired, we put audio and video of the show up there too, so you can go back in time. 1,532 shows, 14 years of Tech Guy shows. It'll be 15 years in January. That's a long time in tech, right? 15 years ago, what we were probably using DOS. I don't remember. It was the bad old days, 2003, 2004. 8888 Ask Leo. Meanwhile, one of the reasons I like doing this show and I love covering technology is because I feel like sometimes I feel like I'm living in the future with self-driving cars and augmented reality. I got to play with something that has been, I don't know, maybe a little bit overhyped for the last few years. The Magic Leap. Magic Leap is a company creating a augmented reality headset. And they've been doing it for a while. They raised, I don't know, maybe $1 billion, a huge amount of money, because everybody wants to be in the next big thing. You know, if you're a very, very wealthy person, you know, I just can't buy stocks anymore. Those mutual funds are so boring. You try to find, you know, the next Uber or the next Twitter or the next Facebook, and it's kind of a scramble. So when you see something like Magic Leap, even though everything Magic Leap described in the early days of the company was imaginary, you might pour money into it. Google was one of the first to invest in Magic Leap. And then some of the big names on Sand Hill Row and Palo Alto, Road in Palo Alto, like Andreessen Horowitz and Kleiner Perkins. And I think 1.4 billion dollars. I'm sorry, $1.4 billion. That's how much money has been funneled into Magic Leap. They never showed anybody anything, right? You'd go in, and I didn't get this privilege, but a select few, mostly people with big checkbooks, but a few, you know, journalists would go in, be shown the prototypes, and told, you can't write about this. All you can do is say, it's amazing. I remember couple of years ago reading a review in, I think it was in Wired magazine, by Kevin Kelly, in which he said, I can't tell you anything, but it's amazing, which of course makes everybody go, oh, let's put some more money into this. So finally they released a developer edition, a creator's edition. This is the thing now to do in Silicon Valley. In order to get something like this working, you've got to get people writing software for it, and you want to do that before you actually release a consumer version. Google did it with Google Glass. Good thing, because it flopped. See, it's not always a guarantee of success. The Oculus Rift, the virtual reality headset, same thing. They had a Kickstarter. People, you know, got the developer's edition. Microsoft's doing it with their augmented reality headset, HoloLens. And usually these developer editions are quite expensive. I think Magic Leap's developer edition is several thousand dollars. A friend, a game consultant, brought it by, Nicole Lazzaro from Zio Design, and she had been at LeapCon, which is Magic Leap's first big convention in L.A. this week. And so she had one of these creator's editions. And she had some games that had been debuted this week at LeapCon. And I got to play with it for a while. Now, I have to say, one of the problems with these technologies, and I remember this very well with the Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive, these virtual reality headsets, is initially your reaction is, wow, I'm living in the future. This is amazing. I've got this headset on, and I've been transported to another world, and I can interact with it. Not really well, but I can interact with it. I remember with an Oculus, I think it was actually the HTC Vive, they had a demo where you're standing on the on a precipice, on the edge of a building, looking down, skyscraper, looking down, and you really, your heart starts pounding, and you go, oh, it's very effective. Magic Leap is not the same, though. And by the way, as wowed as I was by virtual reality, I quickly realized, this has got a problem. It makes me queasy, makes a lot of people queasy after only a few minutes. It's sweaty. You don't want to wear this visor for very long. My 15-year-old and his friends, they love it. They play it all. We have an HTC Vive at home. They seem to play it a lot, although I think even they are getting a little tired of it. I'm not sure VR, at least as it stands today, is that compelling. And so I want to be cautious when I try on these new things, like the Magic Leap, thinking, well, you know, initially I know I'm going to love this, but it was interesting. I guess the thing, the takeaway is we're in early days yet. If you were shown one of the old, you know, Asteroids games or Pong games 30 or 40 years ago and told, you know, someday people will play these for hours a day and they will have entire lives in these games and it'll be a multi-billion dollar industry eclipsing even the movie industry, you'd say, well, I don't get it. Really? That? Pong? We're in the Pong stages of augmented reality for sure. But I can see a little glimpse into how this might be amazing. Nicole told me, she said, I think in a year or two, you'll be able to buy devices like this that look like spectacles. They look like your regular glasses, maybe a little bit bulkier, but not much. They don't look dorky. You can walk around with them. You see the world. The world doesn't go away. It's one of the things I kind of like better about augmented reality versus virtual reality. Virtual reality seals the world off. You're blind. Somebody could sneak up behind you if they wanted. You can't see anything. You bump into walls. Augmented reality is just like sunglasses. You see everything. But superimposed on the real world is other stuff, whether it's games or information or a user interface. So I can almost see, and the sound's very good on the Magic Leap. It's really spatial. It's, you know, it moves around you as you turn your head. I can see that it's probably in our, let's put it this way, in our lifetime, in the next 5 years, almost certainly, people will start wearing these. And by 2030, 2025, this will be commonplace. Everybody will have one, just like everybody has a smartphone. And it's really going to change the way we see the world because it'll be another layer superimposed on the real world, a layer of information that's always available, superimposed in our vision and our hearing over the real world. Do you get what I'm saying? How this might really change everything? You know, I don't want to be overly enthusiastic because we've seen things like this that you get excited about and then they just peter out. I don't think this one is. They now call it mixed reality. That's what Microsoft calls it, or XR instead of VR or AR, because it can have all of the above. You can be in one of these glasses can do all of those things. And I do think they'll be around, and I think maybe even commonplace in not too long. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We will take a break and then come back and take some calls. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm visiting from the future, and I'll be glad to answer any questions you have. Jonathan on the line from Nashua, New Hampshire. Hello, Jonathan.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
Hey, can you hear me? I'm getting live and the 30-second delay coming over the phone at the same time.
Oh, well, don't listen to the radio. You should only be hearing me. Let's just listen to your phone.
That's what I'm doing.
Uh-oh. Are we feeding? I hope we're not. Is it confusing? If you want, we can call you back.
No, it's slightly confusing, but I think I can deal with it. I want to call you, talk to you about something you spoke with. You spoke with a fellow last week who wanted to know about different applications for phones, for cameras.
Yes, he was using Android specifically. There's a ton of them on iOS, a lot fewer on Android. Yeah,
I am on Android. I have an old Galaxy S6 that I really like. And unfortunately, when that phone came out, Samsung said that it did RAW files.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it was a proprietary RAW format that nothing would understand.
Oh, that's terrible. I'm sorry to hear
not
that.
Not even its own Galaxy application would read it.
You know, the Samsung Galaxy S6 was the first really great camera from a Galaxy.
It really was.
And it blew me away. I took so many pictures with that. I loved that camera.
Yep. Anyway, what I wanted to talk to you about was that for a long time, Lightroom would not understand, and they still don't, understand those particular RAW files.
It's up to Adobe to write a handler for that, and I guess they never did.
They never did, and they aren't planning on it.
Oh, that's too
However,
bad.
I found a solution. I found a solution. Mm-hmm. And the solution is FV5.
Ah, a great camera app. I did mention that last week. Yeah.
You certainly did.
And it will do RAWs that you can read.
Yes. It will convert the Samsung S6 RAW files into DNG.
That's Adobe's digital negative format. They're pushing it that as a standard for RAW file format. So that's awesome.
They are.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. I can now... I'm trying not to.
Uh-oh.
I'm still getting both over both over the phone.
I'm sorry about that. We'll investigate that. Okay.
That's okay. No problem. The DNG files that FP5 puts out will be recognized by Lightroom.
Nice.
Consequently, my 3-year-old phone, you know, puts out RAW files, and, you know, it's great.
I'm a big fan. F camera FV, as in Frederick Victor, -5, is a camera phone app for Android. They have a light version and a $4 version. Let me explain, though, Jonathan, I appreciate the tip. Let me explain to people what we're talking about, though, because I don't want to leave anybody out here. When you take a picture with anything, with a camera phone, with a point-and-shoot camera, or even with a very high-end professional digital camera, all digital cameras will create JPEGs. That is a highly compressed file format. Looks pretty good. JPEG is pretty good, but it does take some data out of the format, just like MP3 takes some music out of the music file to get more compression. And most cameras will deliver in JPEG. All camera phones will deliver in JPEG. However, that isn't, in fact, all the data that the camera, the sensor, picks up. If you wanted all of that data, you would look for a camera that allows you to see the RAW file. That's the unprocessed, uncompressed, usually very large file that contains every bit of data from the sensor. The problem with RAW files, there's several. One, they have to be processed because a RAW file doesn't look like a picture. It looks black and white. It's kind of funky looking. It's like looking at a digital negative. And so in order for us to look at the picture, you have to render it. You have to draw it. And that means some processing. So that means something has to understand the format of the RAW file. And that's the other problem, is that every single camera has its unique RAW file format. In fact, even from an individual manufacturer, you might get several different. Canon has changed their RAW file format several times, as has Nikon, as has Sony. And programs that are designed for professional photographers will have some way of processing this. Adobe has what they call Adobe Camera Raw, that is an engine that will take the RAW file and make it look like a picture so you can edit it. Apple's come with a Camera Raw processor as well. So if you're going to be shooting RAW, you absolutely need a program to understand that understands it. And I guess nobody ever bothered to write a processor for this Galaxy S6's RAW file format. In a camera phone, the RAW file format isn't necessarily going to be a lot better. Most people should just stick with JPEG. You know, we were talking with Rishi Sanyal, who's the science editor for DP Review, the digital photography website. And he's been taking a look at, spent some time talking with Google at the new Google Pixel 3 phone. It offers a RAW file format. In fact, you can shoot with the Pixel camera RAW plus JPEG, which is kind of what you want. So there's a JPEG version the camera creates that you can look at and see. And then if you wanted to, you could go into the actual bits and use a program to do it. And what's great about the Pixel 3 is it saves natively into the digital negative format that Adobe's pushing. That means everything can read it. You know, every program can handle DNG these days. And I hope Adobe in the long run gets this you know, gets all the camera companies. I have a couple of cameras that write DNG, including a Leica Q that writes a DNG file format. And I really, it is much more convenient. And when I import files into Lightroom to edit, I always have Lightroom converted to DNG so that I don't have to worry later if I have a raw file format converter. It'll be very interesting. I'm getting my Pixel 3 XL Thursday. I'm going to take as many pictures as I can. I think we're going to go down to Chinatown for some colorful, interesting shots and some night shots and some firework shots, things like that. And I'll talk about it next week, but I'm very interested in playing with this new file format and this new camera. They're doing a lot of processing. They get night shots by doing 9 photos at once. They have some amazing kind of fake camera fill where they brighten up faces. They know their faces from their artificial intelligence research. So they can brighten up faces and but not the background. They've got portrait modes galore. It's really interesting. I'll talk about it next week. Our show, our very, very good show, our podcast, also brought to you by Carbonite. Carbonite's been such a boon personally for me. One of the sponsors who's kept the show on the radio, kept the podcast network going. We just love Carbonite. From customer data to disaster recovery and backup, you got to protect your stuff. You got to protect it in the cloud, on your servers, in your virtual machines, and that's what Carbonite offers. Take a look at Carbonite Endpoint Backup. Here's a great example. These days, you've got many employees with smartphones and laptops. You've got multiple offices. You've got data all over the place. Endpoint Backup makes sure that it's all protected, all backed up, and it does some very smart things. For instance, of course, it's encrypted. Everything Carbonite does is fully encrypted. But it's a challenge with encrypted data to avoid duplication of files, right? So Carbonite's got a patent on a deduplication system for encrypted data. No one else can do this. Technically, whether two users have the same file or 200 users, Carbonite's very sophisticated patented algorithm makes sure that there's one copy uploaded to the vault. That saves you space. It saves you bandwidth. It saves you money. They still use 256-bit encryption. Each data set has its own encryption key. But this is awesome. Each key is for a snippet of the file. So even if somebody got the key, it would only unlock a little bit. And that's, by the way, the key to the deduplication, too. Carbonite covers up to 2 million endpoints in a single vault, and you can have as many vaults as you need. So no matter how big your business gets, no matter how many employees you've got, no matter how many mobile devices you have, Carbonite scales seamlessly. Carbonite Endpoint Backup, maximum flexibility. You can deploy it in the public cloud, on a private cloud, on premises, any combination of them. They have a tool they call QuickCache, again, proprietary. The only ones who have it backs up small data sets locally throughout the day over the LAN, where it's not using, you know, internet bandwidth. It's fast. It means recovery is very, very quick, up to 10 times faster. Minimal bandwidth disruption, and then, of course, to the cloud later. Carbonite, that's called QuickCache. Carbonite Endpoint Backup also enables remote wipe, so if an employee leaves or a phone is lost, no problem. Total peace of mind, total security, not just for laptops, phones, tablets. They have all sorts of features, things like don't back up when you're on battery or if you're not on Wi-Fi, things like that. You have complete control over it. You got to learn more about the Carbonite Endpoint Backup at Carbonite.com. C-A-R-B-O-N-I-T-E, Carbonite.com. We thank them for making the Tech Guy podcast possible. Chris Marquardt normally joining us at this time to talk digital photography. He is still out on a workshop, but he'll be back next week. And we will be doing I think he'll be doing his review of our assignment. We were asking you, it's not a contest. There's no prize, just really a way to get people out there and taking pictures. And I'm ashamed to say I haven't taken any yet, but there's still time of an image illustrating the word or concept hat. If you find a great one that you just took, don't use old pictures, something new, because we want you out there taking pictures. And it doesn't have to be with a fancy camera by any means. Chris is looking at composition and choices and things like that. Upload it to Flickr. There's a Tech Guy group on Flickr. Make sure you put hat in the tag field and submit it to the Tech Guy group. Renee Silverman, our moderator, will thank you. And then you'll be in the pool of photos we'll be taking a look at. Chris will pick 3 next week to talk about. hat is our assignment. We'll get a new assignment next week. To line four we go. Robert, Mira Mesa, California. Hello, Robert.
Hi, Leo. I need to access your technical wisdom, and I truly appreciate your show every weekend.
Thank you.
My niece has moved to Oregon. She's a nurse. She travels in rural Oregon. She hikes, she bicycles, she walks. But we're looking for a personal digital, how do you call it? Personal locator beacon.
Oh, yes.
Satellite uplink.
Yes.
With good battery life, not dependent on cellular. The areas that she goes to have very spotty cellular reception.
Yes.
Something where you could press a button and, you know, the emergency medical or law enforcement can locate you within 10 feet. That type of thing.
A lot of people use these, especially like your daughter out in the wilderness hiking. It's a great safety device, and I highly recommend it. The technology is called SPOT, S-P-O-T, and SPOT is a satellite messenger, satellite system. So it does not use the cell networks because, hey, you know, if you're within cell reach, that's less of a problem. It's when you're up in a mountain or in the middle of nowhere with no cell access. That's when you're at most at risk. So it uses a satellite network. It does GPS. It will send family and emergency rescue people location. You can mark waypoints on Google Maps. You can let your family know that you're where you are on your hike, that kind of thing. There are a number of these. I would say go to findmespot.com because they have these a number of different solutions, including a messenger, which will let her text message as well.
So it's called FindMeSpot. That's S-P-O-T dot com.
Yeah, that's one manufacturer. There are Spot is a service that is other people use it, but I think FindMeSpot.com is the one to take a look at. And the prices will range. The Spot satellite messenger I think is a couple of $100, something like that. I mean they're not super cheap, but you know it'll save you, which is nice.
Yeah, price is no object
of course
if it
not.
Saves a life.
That's of course
the key
not.
Thing.
And satellite's amazing. We did a podcast for some years called Roz Rose with an amazing woman named Roz Savage who literally rode across the ocean solo. And we were able to talk to her via satellite phone every day, even in the middle of the Atlantic.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so this really works everywhere. I think findmespot.com is the place to go for it. They have the broadest range of solutions.
Fantastic. That is wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks
again
for the call.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I'm not an adventurer, so this comes from others recommendations. If you've got one, you can of course call 8888-ASK-LEO or go to our website techguylabs.com and leave a comment if you think there's something better. Garmin makes something called the InReach handheld satellite communicator. I don't think that uses the Spot network. There are watches that use Spot. So there's a variety of other devices. Garmin, of course, is a well-known kind of the king of the hill in GPS. And that might be another one to look at. The Garmin InReach is $287 on Amazon. It looks like they just look like a little walkie-talkie, basically. DeLorme also makes one. I guess, you know, these companies that used to make these GPS navigators, you know, the third-party devices you'd suction cup onto the window of your car, they're kind of looking for other businesses these days. Everybody's got a smartphone. Nobody needs one of them. And most cars, frankly, have the GPS built in. Seth, Long Beach, California. Leo Laporte.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Seth.
So, my parents are finally aging. They're finally admitting it.
You sound like you're glad.
Hard of hearing.
Oh, hearing. Ah, yes. And no one wants to admit that they can't hear.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was just recently at their house, and they argue constantly over the volume
yes.
that the television needs
yes.
to be set.
Yes.
So,
one of them hears better than the other one? Is that the problem?
Yes, but they both hear terribly is the difficulty. They do have a Sonos system, so when they have guests over, I was definitely going to get a bridge so that they can bring that in.
Nice.
But frequently, they will need potentially headphones.
Yes.
So I was wondering if there is a system that can broadcast either Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, at least on the consumer end.
Yes, there absolutely are. In fact, this is what I got my mom, because it's absolutely the case that, you know, we're sitting watching TV and she can't understand it. And so she'll turn up really loud, and then now I'm going to be deaf. So there are, of course, hearing aids that you can pair to your TV as well. But if they're not wearing hearing aids yet, and I know that's a hard thing. I actually wear hearing aids because after years of working in radio, the headphones that I've worn my whole life have started to deteriorate my hearing. And so most of the hearing aids out there will also pair to TVs. But if they don't have hearing aids, there are a lot of very good TV headphones. The ones you want are RF, not Bluetooth. RF gives you a greater distance. They actually also make infrared, IR. Those are the worst. If you turn your head, I used to have an IR pair of headphones. If you turn your head, the sound goes off because it has to be line of sight to the headphones. So get RF. Sennheiser makes very good quality headphones. That's what I got my mom, wired or unwired. And they have RF-based, not Wi-Fi, but dedicated RF transmitter stand that will plug into the TV. And then you can have multiple headphones receiving, which is really nice. Plus, with RF, they don't have to pair it. And, you know, Bluetooth pairing fails and all sorts of stuff. So
now, with the audio systems getting more devices, should I look at a hub or something to pass the audio?
No, that's the beauty of RF, because they come with one hub that plugs into the TV, but RF is broadcast. So you can have 20 headphones, 100 headphones. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Because it's not Bluetooth. It's not pairing.
On the back end for passing audio from it, should I pass it? They typically use a satellite box. They don't typically watch DVDs or Blu-rays. But should I put the sound unit
Depends.
After the TV?
Your TV will probably have a way of it's a little complicated, but a way of hold on a second. Leah, I will take a break. Leah Laporte, the tech guy, and I'll explain it. I didn't have quite enough time. It's actually very simple. Whatever you'd plug speakers into, you'd plug the headphones into. So if the TV has a headphone jack, usually that's adequate. Or optical out. Most of these will take optical out as well. So and then in order for, because the TV is getting a signal from something, usually it's getting a signal of audio and video. So the TV has the audio. So what are they listening to right now? The TV speakers?
Yeah. They have a Vizio that has older speakers in it. And
right.
Yeah, when they get.
So the thing to check is if that Vizio has had a headphone jack, you can use that. And put that into the base.
Got an optical out, which would probably be my, I think, might be the preference, right?
It is. Most of the TVs have eliminated headphone jacks in favor of optical out, because optical out is usually used for a sound bar. So if it has, so check to see if it has optical out, and then you'll need to get a headphone system that supports optical in, obviously.
Okay. And then, so if I were to layer in the Sonos bridge for, you know, when they actually do have a group of people, the chain would be satellite box, television, headphone, and then Sonos bridge.
You want to use the bridge to put internet radio through their speakers? What are you using the bridge for?
So I'll use the bridge for when they actually want to broadcast the audio from their satellite box to the rest of the house, because they do like to turn on MSNBC and just walk
and just
around.
Have
it
running throughout the house. Yeah.
Yes. They're not big onto internet radio yet. I'm working on it, but they're not there yet.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm trying to think of how you would configure that. Off the top of my head, I'm not sure, but it's going to depend a little bit on how it's set up in the house. But yes, what you're talking about will work. What you probably want is some device that will have two audio outputs, one to the TV and one to the bridge or something like that. Do they have an AV receiver?
Not yet, but that's one of the things that I was going to look into for them.
Yeah, because basically you'd use that as a splitter. So I'm just trying to think of so the bridge is going to need I think the bridge takes optical in. I have one, but yes. I don't remember. Okay. The problem is the TV is going to have optical out, but the so you may have a conflict. The bridge might be taking the one port that you would use for the headphones. So that's the trick.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering if Sennheiser has a pass-through on their...
No, nothing has a pass-through. So that's where you'd probably would need an AV receiver. That's how I drive my bridge.
Okay. Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, AV receivers, you can get one cheaply, and that's basically going to be a splitter.
Awesome. Well, okay. I appreciate it very much.
All right, my pleasure. You're doing a good job. You're a good boy. Your parents will thank you. Take care. Yeah, I sent my mom the Sennheisers. In fact, I just got her a new TV, and she says, it's so funny. Mom, if you're watching, I'm not making fun of you. She says, because the TV she has in the living room, we hooked up speakers. I got some external powered speakers. We plugged into the headphone jack. And she says, well, I can't use the TV in the living room with headphones because it has speakers. And I said, yeah, I know, Mom. That's because – but I want a TV in the bedroom that I can use with both – with headphone jack. And anyway, I got her a TV that has a headphone jack and this optical out, and then I'll solve it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you. I'm right here. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Dave is in Seattle. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing great, great. Love your show, man.
Is the sun shining in Seattle today?
I'm just getting up. I work late nights and I...
So you don't want the sun to... You said, I don't want the sun to shine. Go away, sun. I'm sleeping.
Yeah, I got off at 6 this morning. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, thank you for getting up for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, this is my first day of vacation. We are leaving for Mexico tomorrow.
Oh, how fun.
And last year, we go to the same resort every year. So last year we were there, and I like to bring my movies, and I have a little pocket projector, and I have a little screen thing set up for... but I noticed last year I couldn't get my Vudu movies to work. And I know they partner with Movies Anywhere, and they have the link with Amazon and iTunes and everything else. So my question for you is, what do you recommend while I'm out of the country for movies in order to store them or stream them?
Do you want to download them? I mean, obviously, when I travel, especially because I want to watch them when I don't always have internet access, like on a plane or a boat.
Right.
So I download them, and that way I've got copies. It's always a little bit of a dicey because Netflix and Amazon, which both allow you to download movies, will also expire them because they don't want to get pirated. But if you do it right before you leave, like right now, download some movies, you can watch them that way. If you're using Movies Anywhere, which I love, Movies Anywhere used to be Disney Movies Anywhere, but Disney took their name off of it. What it does is it will aggregate all the movies you buy on iTunes, Amazon Prime, you mentioned Vudu, V-U-D-U, Google Play, Microsoft, and even Fandango Now. So if you buy, and I love this because, you know, sometimes I'll buy movies in different services, which is stupid.
Right.
But I do that. You know, if I buy them on iTunes, normally I can only play them with I have an Apple TV or an Apple device. But with Movies Anywhere, almost all the movies you buy will now be in your Movies Anywhere subscription, and they let you download them.
Well, if you don't know, they even upgrade them to 4K on the Apple,
I know.
Which I love.
I know. Apple, that's Apple doing that, and I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm aware of all those connections between all those streamers, and I even built myself a spreadsheet because I have multiple accounts. So when I get to Mexico, I'm like, well, which one of these is going to work best for me? But I did already, you know, download a bunch of them, too. I upgraded my iPhone recently, so on my old phone, I deleted everything I didn't want and just put Vudu and, I think, Amazon Prime on there.
Cool.
And downloaded, like, 70 movies, so yeah. I think I'm going to be okay, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's a good way to do it. And I like Movies Anywhere because I don't have to think where's my Monster versus Aliens movie? Is it on iTunes or is it in Google Movies? It's stupid of me to buy them on multiple sites, but I do. And that way, everything I've ever purchased, and as you said, it's wonderful that Apple is back upgrading anything that was 4K capable that you purchased.
Right.
That's really great. So of late,
it
I've been...
It can be tricky, too, though. Can be tricky because if I get it on Vudu, it isn't always on...
Right.
It's not always Movies Anywhere compatible is what I'm
saying. Right.
Most
that's right.
Are, That's but not right. all of them.
Lately,
but
a lot of stuff has not been. I know. And not everything will be available for download on every service.
Oh, I didn't even know
Just
that.
To further complicate it. Well, all of this gets back to the movie companies and rights issues. And, you know, they may not want you to download them, for instance. There's everybody's in Hollywood is so paranoid about piracy that...
Well, not only the download issue, but then also... streaming them out, like with the HDMI out on
they
my
may
phone.
Not let you, they often won't let you do that unless you're HDCP yeah. compliant along the whole thing. That's their copy protection scheme. So yeah, you have to get a projector that is HDCP compliant. Yep.
I guess the trick is to do it, but also like take good notes because I'm going to forget. You know, by this time next year, maybe.
I forget every year, and I have to kind of Lisa and I have to kind of go through it again. And then agree which movies. So I've been, you know, I'm just looking at my Movies Anywhere. I have 101 movies on there because
well,
it's.
I've got almost 1,000 on.
Nice.
Vudu, but only about 700 of them show up on Movies Anywhere. I'm like, well, that's kind of weird.
Yes, but. That's right. And I'm trying to remember, but one studio has now blocked Movies Anywhere.
Okay.
It might be Disney. I don't know. Who knows? It's all so confusing. Disney's going to do its own streaming service. So there's, you know, there's that.
Right.
It's just, it's, you know, the problem is that, you know, people are so paranoid about piracy, they really try to control all this. I don't blame them. I completely understand. But at the same time, it's very inconvenient. And the sad thing is pirates are not inconvenienced. They know completely.
Yeah, they don't care.
They know exactly how to get the movie into the pirate channel, into BitTorrent and all that. It's only normal people. Who are inconvenienced. People who have, in most cases, bought the movies and just want to watch them on vacation, please.
Yeah. Well, the hardest part was with a big group of people is deciding which movie to watch.
Oh, I bet.
I got my favorites, but I got to please the whole crowd, you know?
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. I loved it, though, that Netflix and Amazon Prime both added the ability to download not all their collection, but some of their collection, because that's really helped me a lot. That makes it a lot easier to travel.
Well, it does work, like the ones that transfer over again from Vudu to Movies Anywhere and then back to Prime. I can download those there in the Prime app, the ones that I own.
Right.
So it works out pretty good.
Yeah, that's very nice. Yeah, and you know, again, like I said, the only thing I have to keep an eye on is, has it expired? Because you have to have internet access to renew it, and often they expire.
Oh, okay. See, that's why I thought I could download a bunch of movies on my old phone and then leave it in airplane.
Yeah, no, you can't just... Oh, well, that's interesting.
It doesn't work that way.
I don't know. These guys are pretty sharp.
I guess I'll try
and again, you own these movies. It's like they're not stopping pirates. Pirates go, oh, well, let me just strip out that code. It's normal.
As I read on the internet, they're talking about Vudu does work in Mexico, but I think it's for movies that you purchase... while in Mexico, not for the ones you already own,
right.
Which makes it more complicated.
That's the other issue. So according to Movies Anywhere, movies from Disney, Sony, 20th Century Fox, Universal, and Warner Brothers are all okay. But any other studio, mm-mm. So you might be able to buy a motion picture from some other studio, but it won't show up in Movies Anywhere.
Okay, well, you know, obviously Vudu's partnered with Walmart as well.
Yeah.
And Walmart's all over in Mexico, so
perfect.
I think that's the one to use, but we'll
perfect.
See.
Where are you going in Mexico?
Cabo San Lucas.
Oh, I love Cabo. Have fun.
Yeah, 10 days down there. I can't wait. I want to say I love your show. I appreciate all you guys do, and compliment for you. I just think you're so patient. Sometimes people call, and I'm thinking that's a dumb question, but you know, maybe my question's a dumb question to someone else. But of course, you never say that on the radio. I'm like, oh, this guy is so patient with people. Like, it's awesome.
You ever listen to Bill Handel on Handel on the Law? I'm the opposite.
Okay.
Bill calls every question a dumb question. But Bill and I are good friends, and we have just different points of view. He's greatly entertaining. I may not be as entertaining, but I do think that, you know, really the reason I'm here is not to be particularly entertaining, but more to help people understand technology, because I think nowadays, whether you like it or not, you kind of have to.
Well, that reminds me of when Jimmy Fallon was on Saturday Night Live. He was doing a bit where he would be like the computer tech guy for the office.
Yes.
He'd come in and try to help him. He'd be like, move, get out of the way.
Get out of the way, let me do it here. But that's real life. It's funny because
right.
It's true. Hey, it's great to talk to you. Have a wonderful vacation. I hope you can get your sleep schedule back on track.
Oh, I will. Thank you, Leo.
You're welcome, Dave. Take care. Yeah, Bill Handel calls his show Marginal Legal Advice. So it's got the warning right up front. Bill in Sunland, California. Hi, Bill. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, Leo, have I got a bone to pick with you?
Uh-oh, I'm in trouble.
I'm trying to get my phone to come back on the screen here so I can turn the speakerphone off.
Okay.
I better not touch any buttons because I'm notorious for cutting the phone off, which is par for this course, because I can all that pretty much explains how good I am at technology. I'm one of those guys that has self-taught and been able to teach myself to pretty much instinctively fix TVs and fix electronics.
Nice.
Because it seems that the logic of electricity follows along with my logic pretty good, and we kind of get along, so it's compatible and gives me the ability to actually fix these things, and believe me, it works. And one of my favorite tools before I was fixing flat screens was to use a wooden stick on the circuit board in the old the old tube TVs, and I'll be damned if I didn't find how to fix them doing it that way.
I think that's a military technique, the percussive repair. Yes.
Well, it's percussive. I am a drummer.
I have to take a break. Hang on for just a second. We got to take a break. Coming up, news from your local stations and more of the Tech Guy Show. Another hour to go. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number, and the website techguylabs.com. Percussive maintenance, they call it. And it does seem to work on tube devices better than it does on solid-state devices, alas, right?
Yeah, it does. You get more action out of the tube.
So what's going on?
Okay, you have one very, very unique talent. I think this will sum your ultimate talent up, is that a guy like me who really knows little about operating a computer, because they have trying to follow the logic of computers is like learning a new language. Trying to fix a computer follows the logic of electricity, which, so the crazy thing is I could probably fix the computer, but I don't know how to use it.
That makes sense. I understand that. Yeah. It's software versus
sure,
hardware.
It makes so much sense that it's a constant problem for me, but yeah. One day, one at a time, because
I'm actually better at software than I am at hardware, so we complement each other.
Yes, it does work out that way.
Yep.
But in that regard, I have such a calming time turning you on each weekend and listening to you talk and converse with people about all kinds of problems that I have no idea, but I feel like I'm right at home with it.
Yeah, sometimes I can be too calm and put people to sleep. I've talked to several people who use me to get to sleep at night.
Well, that's because they probably know a little more than I do about it.
No, I think they probably know less. And so it's all just a... And the background to them. If you understand what I'm saying, your brain might engage. But if it's just mumbling, then it's just, I'm sleepy tired.
No, you're not mumbling. I'm listening very astutely to all the things you're talking about. And I'm actually thinking I know what you're saying,
good.
But I don't.
That's a good. So, you don't?
No, I don't. I'm trying to learn by osmosis here.
It'll work. You'll get it. You'll get
sooner
it.
Sooner or later, I'll remember what you're saying about the problems.
Sooner or later, it all makes sense.
Yeah. I got two problems with TVs. I happen to be one of those guys who I go out for running a chore, and I end up finding a TV.
Okay.
So I'm compelled to pick it up and take it home and work on it. It's just, I got to do that. And I've never been electrocuted, so
good. I think enough to discharge the capacitors before you.
It might be
stick your fingers in.
Fun, I don't know.
no, it's not. Here, trust me.
No, I know it's not. I don't think I have about 5 plasma TVs.
Why do you have 5? You just keep picking them up, huh?
Because people throw them away. This is the land of waste. You know, until humans learn how to stop wasting everything, I have to be the equal and opposite universe.
Of course you do.
So I don't mind that. I'm having a lot of fun looking at things. I have no idea what I'm looking at, and then I do learn about them. So the 3 of them work just fine. The only problem with those plasmas, by the way, is how heavy they are. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But
they also use a lot of power. I don't think people realize how much power plasmas use.
Yeah, and a lot of heat, too.
A lot of heat as a result. That's right.
Yeah, because I guess it's the technology of the screen. It uses a lot of power just to get the screen going.
Right.
So, now, what I have is I have 2. I have a Vizio and an LG, which both have the similar problem that I thought I'd ask you a question about because I haven't found a real good answer to that makes me feel comfortable. They both work. Everything works on both of them. But the picture on both of them is weak, as in it looks like it's wore out.
It is wore out.
It is wore out.
Yeah, this is one of the reasons people stopped making plasma. So the way plasma works is they're exciting a gas in a cell, right? That gas eventually, over time, leaks out of the cell, and the plasma screen gets dimmer and dimmer. And eventually, you got nothing. So that's what's happening. There are older plasmas, particularly a problem in older plasmas. Newer plasmas, they've, I guess, figured out a way to kind of slow that down. Although nobody, by the way, nobody manufactures these anymore. They've stopped.
I thought there was a revival of the plasma.
No. Not that I know of. So, and there's other problems with the plasma. They don't work well at altitude because of the gas different atmospheric pressure. So, so where they're getting dim, that's typical of a plasma. That's just normal, and there's no way to reverse that. That's just the way a plasma TV is. It wears out.
I got a lot of parts in those,
Yeah, well, that's all you got because the screen is useless.
But, it's all recyclable, so that's important.
Yeah,
too, so.
And you should recycle it, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I had a feeling that might be the case with those from what I've heard and everything, but you've put the icing on the cake for that because I have no problem making a little more space in this apartment. It's a little crowded.
You have how many plasmas in an apartment?
Well, I just the 5, but I've got the other 2 too.
I'm afraid it's time for a garage sale or an apartment sale.
Well, that's exactly what I'm getting into. Is I'm reorganizing, and I even put a portable garage out in the parking lot. And my whole deal is to downsize and finally get all this stuff organized and sold. So
good.
That's what I'm doing.
I support that.
Yeah, it's too much. It gets to. I had too much luck finding, and I got to do the follow through, and that's what I'm doing.
Well, good luck.
And if everything gets, if I have to throw it away, or actually I parts it out, or make sure it's recycled. The other problem I have is with a recent Vizio that I had. It's an E40 in the E series, and I've learned a little bit about the E series and the procedure for testing, but I was wondering if you guys know of anything in particular that might typically go wrong with an E-series.
No, that's a tougher one. You know, my mom has an E-series that turns itself off periodically, and this is one that's been driving me nuts. We haven't been able to figure it out. And
well,
I just
somebody's looking from the inside the TV.
Yeah, that's it.
And they're so, tired of the picture.
Then generally speaking, with LCD TVs, actually all of these direct displays these days, they're basically computers. And nowadays with computers, people don't really fix them. They swap parts. So there is, and I'll put this in the show notes, Scooter X in our chat room is putting up an article, what to do when your Vizio TV won't power on. And so that maybe is something that has happened to a number of Vizios. So I will put this in the show notes. It's from VIZHDTV.com. Fix your power problems in five easy steps. You probably can Google it, but we'll put it also at TechGuyLabs.com. Interesting. I wonder if this is these are all kind of what you'd expect. That they're not really about fixing it. They're just a It's the equivalent of, is it plugged in? That's pretty basic. All right, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. We're going to get back to work now. Well, hey, how are you today? Good to see you. Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We've got smartphones. We've got smartwatches. We've got augmented reality, virtual reality, even real reality. I mean, I am set. The phone number, 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, you can still call. Don't worry. Just use your Skype out or something like that, and you can reach the number because it's toll-free, 888-ASK-LEO. You can also visit our website. That's where I put lots of information. I don't do it. James DeRuvo does it. Our team does it. But you don't have to sign up or pay anything to get there. It's just go to the web, techguylabs.com. And if you hear something on the show and you want to know more, that's the place to go. And if you want to say something, you can leave a comment there too. Much more effective than yelling at the radio. To Buffalo, New York we go. Gary, have you had your first snowfall yet in Buffalo?
No, it got quite cold the other day, but it's beautiful today. 6 degrees, sunshine.
I love Upper New York State. It's gorgeous up there. What can
Let me first make a quick comment about the Spot and the Garmin you were talking
about.
Okay,
good.
Alternative that I prefer is the PLB, the Personal Locator Beacon. They sell for about $200 to $400. There's all different versions of them. I buy one that's about $225, Mercurto. Use it for hiking. The nice thing about it is it operates the government satellites. When you hit it, the government gets it. There's no subscription fees. The battery lasts about 5 years. You can even have the battery replaced for about half that price if you want. And it just goes directly to the government.
Excellent.
And, so whatever country you're in, it's an international thing, and I think it's much better than. I mean, the Spots and the Garmins and the InReach, they have a lot more features. But if you just want to get there, you want to rescue there. That's I think the PLB is the way to go.
Excellent. Have you ever had to use it?
No. Okay. In fact, there's an interesting story when they were first allowed to be used commercially.
Yeah.
It happened in New York State, in the Adirondacks. A person used it in an appropriate circumstance in November. He got caught in a snowstorm in a canoe. He had canoed into an area to camp, and the snowstorm came in. He couldn't get out. He used it, and the Department of Environmental Conservation was a big to-do about it. This was great. This shows how good these things are. We saved this guy's life. A month later, he went back to get his canoe, and there was a slight snowstorm, and it wasn't enough to justify using it, but he used it anyway, and he arrested him and charged him.
Yeah, so only use it if you need it, my friends.
Yeah, so he was the first person to use it and the first person to get charged for using it improperly.
Wow. He said, this worked great. I got to do this again. Got a free ride home. Okay, so don't use it in vain. PLB, Personal Locator Beacon. Thank you, because I was, you know, as I said, I'm not exactly an adventurer. You know, going to IHOP is the most adventurous I get. So I don't know anything about these, but I'm glad somebody who does have some experience.
Yeah, but this, I mean, the spot's an excellent product if you want all the other features.
I forgot to mention there is a subscription fee, and that is something to consider.
Yeah, there is a subscription fee. It's not the PLB though. That's once you buy it, you register it. You know, you just register it with the government, and you're fine.
Your tax dollars already paid.
That's right, and it's international. So,
nice.
You know, wherever you are in the world, it works.
I got to get, that's a good idea to get one of those. That's great. Just as an extra thing to have around, just in case.
Yeah, I mean, I even care because my son lives in the Adirondacks, and there's areas where when you're driving there, there's no cell service.
Oh, yeah.
I keep mine in the car in case, you know, I'm in a senior.
I have a dear friend, former coworker at Tech TV, James Kim. He and his family were this is the earlier days of GPS, were following a GPS device. It took them, unfortunately, onto a fire road in the mountains, got snowed in, couldn't get out, and they were stuck there for days living off, you know, snack food. They had little kids, burning tires to stay warm. Eventually, he said, I gotta go for help. He tried to hike to safety. He froze to death. He died. The family was rescued later. Wonderful guy, very sad. And had they had a PLB, none of that would have been necessary.
Oh, absolutely. Would have saved them within 12 hours.
Yep.
Okay, so my question. I've been an AT&T customer for a long time, but I'm thinking of moving to Project Fi. In fact, I bought a couple of Moto X's when Amazon had their sale earlier this year, and I've got one on Project Fi, so I'm experimenting with it. One of the problems I've had, though, I had two things I wanted to solve. One was using a program of some sort that would exclude, would reject calls from particular area codes, because I get a lot of
robocalls. It's a nightmare. Now, of course, a lot of these robocalls come from your area code, which is even more frustrating.
Yeah, that is. But at least I wanted to get rid of the other one. And I found a program that does that. It works fine.
Actually, it's interesting. Google's building us into Android. It's available on the new Pixel 3, and it will be available on all. If you're going to get Google Fi, you'll be getting a Google phone, probably. All the phones that support Fi will have this. It's not carrier-based. In-phone rejection that allow you to call, send it straight to voicemail or request that they identify themselves. I think every phone will have this soon. Robocalls are really the bane of smartphones now. Almost all my calls are robocalls.
Yep, in fact, I talked to Project Fi about it, and they said, there's no way to do that currently. And I think
some carriers will. I think you can go to the AT&T and say, at least you can say block this number. But I don't know if blocking an area code is kind of extreme. But I know what you mean. There's certain area codes. There's no one I know there. If you use Google Voice, you can. Google Voice has some fairly sophisticated features. I don't know if you can block area codes. But what you can do is say, if they're not in my contact list, I want them to identify themselves before my phone even rings, and that gets rid of all robocalls because robocalls can't identify themselves.
The program I found was called Prefixer.
Prefixer,
and
okay.
Like $2.
So you can block individual prefixes.
Yes. Nice. So you can block, 1-502,
nice.
And then anything that follows that. So
we're going to see a lot more of this stuff. It's just such a, I'm on every do not call registry and it does no good because they're all out of the country. They're all illegal.
The other thing Prefixer solved for me, and that's actually how I found it at first, but here's the problem. When I'm using my Fi phone, with my AT&T phone, if I have a local number, particularly if someone calls me and they leave a phone message and they leave their 7-digit phone number in the message, whether I get Umail or Google Voice, it has that link with
right.
the 7 digits.
You just tap
you
it.
Press it, and it,
yeah.
and it calls it. Well, with Project Fi, if my phone is using the Sprint service, it defaults to a New Jersey area code.
What?
It calls people in New Jersey, and they're getting upset with me.
What?
Yeah. If I dial a 7-digit number, my Project Fi phone, when it's on Sprint, will add the New Jersey area code before the seven digits and send it there.
That's weird. I've never experienced that, but we don't have very good Sprint service.
I was on the phone with Project Five for an hour.
They know about it, or is it something unique to you?
No, they know about it. And they say you should always dial 10 digits. And that's, a habit I probably got to get into, but it messes up when you get that.
Yeah, because that's a real nice feature. Maybe we'll just tap the number in the message and it'll call back. So,
well, Prefixer fixes that. It fixes that problem. But then I thought, why don't I just find a way to stay on T-Mobile when T-Mobile is available? Because I'm finding that, like in my house, both of them are Sprint and T-Mobile both work fine.
I got to run, so I'll give you the quick answer to this. One of the nice things about Fi is it uses U.S. Cellular, T-Mobile, and Sprint and switches between them, and Wi-Fi, and switches between them depending on which is better. And normally you would want to let it do that, but if you have a situation like this, there is a program that I really like called Signal Spy that will let you do that. It'll let you choose the network. It'll let you see what network you're on. I don't recommend this. Normally, you want to let Fi do its thing. I've heard, too, that there are codes, dialer codes, that might work to do this, too. So Signal Spy has that built in. So that might be something else to check out, that you can just dial a code while you're home, say, and you know you've got a good, strong T-Mobile signal, and say, don't give me the Sprint calls, please. Signal Spy is on the Android store. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. We will go back to the phones and take more of your calls in just a bit. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. The Tech Guy podcast brought to you by LastPass. LastPass locks up our valuables. The most valuable thing I've got these days in my business is actually the passwords, right? The passwords to our servers, our bank accounts, our books. Unfortunately, if you're a business, you've got to give those passwords to your employees. And I saw some research that said more than half of all employees share passwords, not just with other employees, but with everybody. You don't want that. You want LastPass. LastPass Enterprise protects our passwords. I can share them with employees without actually giving them access to the password. Or I can, if I want. I can let them change it or not. You've got complete control. In fact, over 100 policies that control your passwords and keep your secret stuff secret. You can say, for instance, and we do this, all employees have to use two-factor authentication to log into LastPass. You can use the LastPass Authenticator app, which is awesome, and it's not even six digits. It just pops up a button on their phone that says, I see you're logging into the bank account. Is that really you? That's so fantastic for security. We have resets. If somebody forgets their password, and that happens surprisingly often to their LastPass vault, that's okay. We can reset it. No big deal. I store everything in there, not just passwords, SSH keys, driver's license information, social security information. I even put my passwords in LastPass because I know LastPass is safe. That vault is encrypted. It's only decrypted on the device. LastPass doesn't even have access to the contents. Only I do. And by the way, LastPass works everywhere I do, even Linux. And that's one of the reasons we use LastPass, because I need it to work on Windows, on Mac, on Linux, on Android, on iOS. They've got browser plugins for every single browser. And on iOS 12 now, autofill has been enabled. This is a feature LastPass was waiting for Apple to support, and they do. So now when I'm logging into an app, even on my smartphone, if you have an Android Oreo or iOS 12, it'll autofill it if I want, which is fantastic. In fact, it's why I put LastPass. The first thing I put whenever I get a new computer or a new phone, first thing that goes on there is LastPass, because then I can log into all those apps. I can set them all up that much faster. LastPass has a password generator built in. That's important because your employees are going to want to use their cat's name and birthday, and you don't want them to do that. So you can require that they use the password generator and create completely unmemorable, completely random, long, strong passwords. They don't have to remember them, though. LastPass does. That's the beauty of it. You're going to love LastPass. There's LastPass Premium for personal use. If you're not already using it at home, you must. LastPass Family for the family. We do that. That way, I can share passwords with Lisa for all the household accounts. She even has emergency access. So if I, for some reason, become incapacitated, she can, after jumping through some hoops to make sure I'm really incapacitated, get access to all the stuff she needs to settle my estate or help me run my affairs while I can't do it. That is really important. I know we don't like to talk about that, but that's another great feature of LastPass. There's also LastPass Teams if you have a small team, 50 or fewer, and the LastPass Enterprise. That's what we use. I believe so much in LastPass. I give every employee of TWIT their own personal account. It's one of the benefits we give them because I think it's so important they secure their own passwords. And LastPass integrates the enterprise version with your personal version, so you only log in once and you have access to all your passwords. And if you're a Microsoft Active Directory company, you can even use your Active Directory credentials to log into LastPass, which makes it even easier. Secure but easy. That's the key. More than 16 million people trust LastPass. It's the number one most preferred password manager. Learn more at LastPass.com/twit today, and we thank LastPass for supporting the podcast and keeping us secure. LastPass.com/twit. Now back to the show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 ask Leo, the phone number. Steven's on the line from the most wired city in America, Tacoma, Washington. Hi, Steven.
Oh, hi. Hello, Leo. I have this problem with my PC. Oh, I want to say it's a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you. Welcome.
I've been listening to you since the screensaver days.
Far out.
So, my Windows 10 won't update. And my Windows 10, I currently have 1803.
Yes.
Is what my current version is.
Yes.
And it just won't update. It won't update.
It won't do it.
No.
So there are two kinds of updates Microsoft does to Windows. There's the feature updates. 1803 was the spring feature update. We are about to get, if everything goes well, 1809, the fall feature update. They pushed it out a week ago, and it turned out it deleted some customers' data. Microsoft said, no, it's okay. Only 0.01% of customers had their data deleted. Oh, my God, that's a showstopper. So they paused the update. They've tried to fix this. Anyway, 1809 will come out. But the important thing to understand is these feature updates are not critical updates. That's the second kind of update. These are bug fixes and security updates. Those you want. Now, if a blocked 1803 is keeping you from getting hot fixes after 1803, you got to fix it. But as long as you're getting security updates every month on Patch Tuesday, did you get updates last past Tuesday, Patch Tuesday?
It just says your device is missing important security.
Okay, that's bad news. That means that the failure of 1803 screwed up everything. And you do, right. While I don't think it's important to get feature updates, it's absolutely vital to get the security patches. By the way, Microsoft with Windows 10 is not going to let you, if you don't get 1803 and then 1809, eventually they're going to get mad. It's part of the deal that you got to get the updates, even the feature updates. So we got to figure out why your updates are blocked. Microsoft has a troubleshooter for blocked updates. Usually, if you think about it, updating an operating system like this is, in place as it's working is kind of like, rebuilding a jet engine when flight. It's crazy. So it works most of the time, but if it fails, you got problems.
So it's a little utility. Is it called a tech utility setup or something?
It's a registry. First thing they do is go look for the Windows Update Troubleshooter. And that's on Microsoft's site. Don't use anybody else's.
Okay.
So a lot of people will have, information about this, and you can read information, but never get a file from anybody but Microsoft.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So there are a lot of – the reason I say this instead of saying, here's what you do, is there are a lot of reasons it can fail, unfortunately. And when it fails, if it's sticking – if the rest of the updates are paused because of it, you really gotta fix it. So if you Google Windows Update Troubleshooter and you get to support.microsoft.com, you can run that. It's a troubleshooting tool that fixes common problems. It won't fix all of them, but it fixes common problems. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. But don't get it from somebody else. Get it from Microsoft.
I have Googled this error. I Googled the error. It gives me an error of zero, X800, whatever. And then I Googled that, and it brought me to a wiki page.
Okay.
And then it gave me this utility, tech utility setup.
Yeah, I'd be nervous about that.
Yeah,
maybe it is all you need. But if there is something like that, then get it from Microsoft. There are there are lots of little things that can go wrong, and it could very well be that some nice person has written a tool. The problem, of course, is if you're downloading a program from a site unknown, even if that wiki is legit, which I'm sure it is, it's a wiki. Somebody could go in there and say, I'm just going to change that link to my special hacking tool. So you really don't want to do that. Get it from Microsoft, or if you Google the troubleshooter, they have a registry fixed troubleshooter, and then they do have a program that'll run. But get it fixed, and it may be. And sometimes it may be, you know, you got to do something more draconian, like reinstall Windows. Most cases you don't, but it is, if it does in fact require that, it's worth it, because you're really at risk if you're going on the internet with an unpatched version of Windows these days. It's just too dangerous. The issue is, of course, you know, in order for a bad guy to get on your system, he's got to get you to run a program. He's got to get you to agree to something. And that's hard, you know. It may be not as hard as it ought to be, but it takes a, you know, you have to scare somebody or trick somebody to do it. But there's a little loophole here. Bad guys are always looking for flaws, security issues, not just with the operating system, but with browsers and anything that goes online. Things like the Adobe Reader, or Adobe Flash. These are well-known issues. So in the past, they've all been patched, but if you're not doing the patches, you might still be, you know, vulnerable to this. In the past, Adobe Flash had a bug that if you, let me use Adobe Reader instead, because you see PDFs all the time, right? And you need Adobe Reader to read PDFs. And so it's natural to have Adobe Reader on your system. But it turns out bad guys have discovered multiple flaws in Adobe Reader that allow them to create a special PDF. Normally a PDF can't hurt you. It's not a program. But this special PDF can, because it takes advantage of the flaw in the reader to execute a program. Oh, sneaky. Now, how do they get you to do that? Well, they don't have to get you to do that. They just put that PDF on a web page you go to. Most browsers will automatically load the PDF, automatically call Adobe Reader to display the PDF, and boom, you're infected. Completely without any intervention on your part. You don't want that. You want a bad guy to have to trick you, at least. Make it as hard as possible. So you've got to have everything that goes online, your operating system, your browser, Adobe Reader, Adobe Flash, anything that goes online has to be patched, has to be fixed, because the minute the patch is put out, bad guys go, aha, there's a flaw. Let's see if we can find it. And you're much more likely to get bit. And they can put these exploits, they call them, these flaws on a website you might even go to. They can embed it in an ad, or they can hack the website. Websites get hacked all the time. Put it there, and you just go to this. You're going to a perfectly benign website. In the background, without any intervention or visible display on the screen, it loads a PDF, and you're hacked. You don't want that. You need to be patched. Stay up to date. That's the number one rule in security. So, of course, we always say don't click on links, you know, don't fall for stuff, don't download files from wikis. But all of that, all those bets are off if you don't keep your stuff patched, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. On we go with the show. DD in Pasadena. Hello, DD.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling, Dee Dee. What would I do without you?
I am about to rent an office space.
Okay.
And I have a couple questions. They claim that it's free Wi-Fi for unlimited devices, but then they say they throw in like a hard line. And I don't quite get what the hard line's for. I know I have one at the house. And I think it plugs into my router that helps all my Wi-Fi throughout the house. What's the hard line for? Is it faster speed? Do I really need it?
It just comes with it. You don't have to use it. It just comes with it. So your service comes into the wall with a hard line, right?
Well, that's what they have. They have like what would be an outlet, but for a cable.
Yeah, and it comes in and comes into the cable modem, which turns the signal on the cable.
What do you mean a cable modem?
Well, who's your what kind of service do you have? Is it from a phone company, from a cable company? Who's the internet service provider?
That's what I need help with. I don't know. I'm about to rent this office space.
I see. I see. So the people who own the building said, and we're going to include Wi-Fi. We're going to include internet.
Correct.
I got it. Okay. So they're doing it.
Okay. Okay.
And so you don't know who they're getting it from, but they're getting it from a local provider of some kind. So then the reason they give you a hard line is because some people want to connect their computers directly.
Is there a benefit to that?
It's faster.
Okay.
And some devices require it. Not everything has Wi-Fi.
Okay.
So that's kind of normal to provide that.
Okay,
so you have a jack. You have a jack, and what we call an Ethernet jack in the wall. It looks like a phone jack, but it's bigger.
That's exactly right. Thank you for that.
Yes.
Okay.
That's called Ethernet. So this is nice. Do you pay the landlord for this internet access, or they just throw it in with the rent?
They throw in the jack. I think I'm probably going to have to get my own voice.
Ah.
That's a good question.
So that's the question asked the landlord, which is, thank you for throwing in the jack, which is connected to nothing.
Thank you.
That's useless to you. Ask them, do you provide internet access? Almost certainly they don't. I mean, it's possible. It's pretty typical, though, when you rent office space that's wired up for internet access, but that you then have to go to the internet service provider that has wired the place up and buy internet from them.
Okay. Quick question about that. Do you think it's a possibility for me to transfer my? I'm a startup company, so do you think it would be possible for me to transfer my internet company from Spectrum to a building 20 miles away? Like
probably not. So that's another question for the landlord. You have to ask the landlord what internet is available in this building. And you can't transfer it to your building unless Spectrum has wired that building up. They may have. 20 miles away is not germane one way or the other. If Spectrum's in the neighborhood, they may well have. We, in our building, for instance, the studio I'm in right now, we have the local cable company wired it up. There's a closet with all of these connections in part of the building, and the cable company's there. So is a local fiber optic internet service provider called SonicNet. I think there's other companies as well, and they're all in the closet. And then you go to whichever company you want to use. It has to be one of the ones in the closet and say, this one is the one I'd like in my office. So I think you're going to want to talk to the landlord and say, tell me what are my choices. If it's Spectrum, you can add it to your existing Spectrum service, perhaps. Usually cable companies charge differently and charge a lot more for business connections than home connections.
Oh, yeah.
So you want business internet because there's, usually the quality is better, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So you should see what the choices are, and then you might want to do some research by calling the different companies available to you. Just like when you buy a house or rent an apartment, you ask the previous owners or the landlord, well, what kind of internet you get here? And they'll tell you what stuff's been brought in from the curb, and that's the same thing from the landlord. What is available to me on that jack you put in my office? And then I bet you, unless for some reason they're the nicest landlords in the world and they just said, you know what, we're going to pay all the tenants internet access. Most likely they'll say, okay, you have these choices. I would do some research to see what business internet costs and what you get. What'll then happen is they'll wire it up. They may or may not come into your office and wire it up. Probably what they'll do is if you've got an Ethernet jack in your office, they'll just, what they do, they call it light it up. They'll connect it in that closet. There's all those Ethernet jacks go into that closet, and they'll connect that line in your office to the one that's coming into the building, into the closet. They'll connect those. Now you're on that company's internet. And then what you're going to probably have to do is buy a Wi-Fi router.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. So if we did that and I found a company that was wired into their closet, would that necessarily be the Wi-Fi that they're offering for free?
Oh, they offer you free Wi-Fi?
For unlimited devices.
Nice. Is it from, who's it from? Just out of curiosity. Is it from the company that rents you the building, okay. Or?
You know what? If the company puts it in the contract,
Well, that might be all you need. It depends on how fast it is. There are things to be considering.
Oh, okay, we have an inside office, so we're not on an outer wall with a window, so that could cause a problem as well, right?
Maybe, maybe not. You should go in there with a phone or a laptop and just see what you get and how fast it is. Go to, go to dslreports.com on your laptop and choose their speed test and see what you're getting.
dslreports.com.
There are many speed tests. You also go to speedtest.net. Might be good to go to two of them. And then test it on your laptop. And then good idea to test it during the hours you'd want to use the office. So go in the morning, lunchtime, afternoon, and see if it's fast enough for you. If that's free and it's fast enough for you, I say use it. Here's the one thing to keep in mind. Your internet service provider, whoever provides that service, and I would find out, does have, you know, like any internet service provider can see what you're doing. So it's got to be somebody you trust. It may be, who knows? It might be the city that's doing it. It might be, who knows? I don't know who it is. It's interesting. So they do offer you free Wi-Fi, unlimited free Wi-Fi as part
of this. Unlimited devices, she claims.
Well, that's,
When you go to a hotel and they say you can have three devices hooked up to
you. Unlimited devices is nice. I'd like to know if there's a bandwidth limit. Like, if after you download 5 gigabytes, they say, sorry, no more. Because that would be kind of put a crimp in your style.
Okay, so at any given point, there may be two people in the room with a phone. Bandwidth, can you tell me about that really quick? Like, what's the max? What's the fastest?
Well, you should ask whoever's providing that free Wi-Fi what their speeds are. They'll always tell you max. Which doesn't mean they're guaranteeing that speed. That's the max. Usually you'll get less than that, right? Because, you know, everybody lies. And so nobody's ever going to say, well, typically you're going to get 12 megabits. They're going to say up to 40 megabits. So that's not very helpful. That's why I tell you, get the speed test in there and see what you're actually getting, not what they told you you're getting. Ask them if there are any bandwidth caps. If they, for instance, as phone companies do, if they slow it down after you use a certain amount in the month. If they say, no, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited devices, that's good. Maybe you don't need to buy internet access, but you'll have to test that. You know, you can... I mean, look, this is the cost of doing business is internet access these days. So, it's something to keep in mind. But if you're giving it to you for free and it's good quality, that sounds good. Unless your business runs on the internet, then you might want to pay for your own. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So are you working at a incubator or – so you said you're a startup. Is it a normal office building, or are you working somewhere like Idea Labs?
It is actually Hollywood Production in Glendale. So it's a huge building with 200 offices.
So is it a co-working space? Where you rent space in there? Let me look at this.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, we all have our own, like, door number.
Yeah, that's very typical. That's a co-working space. So they very often offer you as part of the rent. They offer you internet, and usually it's good internet. So that's okay. So now that I hear all that, you don't need to. They give you the wired jack in case you have like a fax machine or a printer needs it. But most of your devices, your phones and your laptops, don't. So this is very common in this kind of place.
Do you think I could get a good Dell computer? I don't need an iMac. I don't need a $3,000 computer.
What is the business that you're doing? What are you doing?
I'm selling stationery.
Okay.
And so I need a computer that someone can keep track with the distributing company. So all we really need is Excel, internet, maybe some Etsy orders. And maybe social media for some marketing.
Yeah. A Dell would be very simple. Are you used to using Windows?
Yeah, I use them both.
Okay. Dell or Lenovo. I actually like Lenovo for work. Get one of the Lenovo ThinkPads. They're built like trucks. You can't break them.
And how do you spell that?
Lenovo. Lenovo.
Oh, well, yes.
ThinkPads. But don't get the cheap Lenovos. Get a ThinkPad. They're okay. Still, you can get them at $1,000, but those are built like you can't. I got one right in front of me. You can't break these, and they're okay. And they're boring business looking computers. People don't want them, which is good.
Right.
I'm looking at the Hollywood Production Center right now. I understand
in
now.
Glendale.
In Glendale, utilities, internet, and phone included. This is it's what we call a co-working space, and I'm looking right at the Glendale property, and so now that I understand that. Yeah, you don't need internet. You wouldn't want internet service. You just use theirs.
Okay.
That's part of the rent. They include that in the rent.
Okay, right.
It's what they call a turnkey office space where you walk in. Right. It's got desks. It's got filing. It's got everything you need.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. That internet service is great. It's exactly what you need.
Okay. Okay, perfect. But the ThinkPad would be what I would want for my, which I'm about to hire a COO.
How exciting for you. You're getting a business going here.
Oh, my gosh. And you know what? I actually have radio spots.
Good for you. What are you? You're selling stationery? What are you selling?
The envelopes, computer paper, journals.
You're like Michael Scott. This is like The Office you got going here.
I cannot wait for you guys to start airing my commercials.
Oh, on KFI? Did you buy ads on KFI?
I'm working with Nate in Florida. Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting.
I haven't paid for him yet, but I'm working with
him. Congratulations. What's the name of your company?
Animal Lopes.
I like it. Do they have animals on the envelopes?
They're all hand-drawn art.
Oh, how neat. Are you the artist, Dee Dee?
Yes.
Oh, all right. I'm going to give you a big plug when we come back.
Oh, my God. And you know what? Is there any way that I could, like, reach out to you?
Yeah, like, send me an email, leo@leoville.com. Now, do you have a website? Do you have a website, Dee Dee?
You know, we do, but not really. I'm working on that.
You're on Etsy right now.
I'm on Etsy right now, but you know what? Did you pull it up right now?
Oh, of course. Our chat room is very good. They do background research on all our callers.
You're so funny. Yeah, that's me. But you know what? I have a presentation going to PetSmart.
Good luck. Hey, I got to run, but good luck, Dee Dee.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Leo. Okay.
All right, did a little more digging with Dee Dee. Now I understand. Leo Laporte going to do a little getting down. Get down. The tech guy. Dee Dee's so adorable. Dee Dee actually is starting a business called Animal Lopes. Hand-drawn art stationery. And in fact, she has an Etsy shop right now. So she has rented what we call a co-working space. This is all the rage right now. If you want to start a business and you don't want to start it from scratch, believe me, I know how that is. It's expensive. You got to buy furniture, phone systems, internet systems, all that stuff. You can go to a co-working space. She's gone to a co-working space in Glendale. It's called Hollywood Production Center. And it's a turnkey office space. It's got the office furniture. It includes phone and internet. So the Wi-Fi they've got is fine. That's included in your rent. And this is a huge thing. In fact, it's such a huge thing that one of the biggest turnkey office companies in America, WeWork, has just been acquired by a Japanese company called SoftBank for almost $1 billion. Not exactly an acquisition, an investment for almost in the Vision Fund, almost $1 billion. So this is a big business because there are a lot of people like Dee Dee, and I think this is great, who want to start their own business and they want to do it simply and easily. So it's a turnkey office space. And part of the turnkey is, you know, you walk in the door, you turn the key and it's ready to go, is it has office furniture, it has a phone system, and it has internet. So Dee Dee, there's nothing more you need do. You got it all. It's right there in the building. And I think a lot of people, you know, are starting a business or maybe you're an attorney or, you know, you do any kind of office work. This is a great solution because you don't have all the headache of having a lease and having I see them springing up all over the place. So now that I'm sorry, Dee Dee, I was thick. I was dense. I didn't completely understand what you're talking about. Now that I do and I'm looking at the website for where you're going. Yeah, you don't need internet. You've got internet. Use their Wi-Fi. And it's lovely. They have an Ethernet jack in case you want to use a hardwired system. And by the way, if you want to see Dee Dee's Animal Lopes, she's on Etsy. Just search for Animal Opes, like envelopes with animals or something. I don't know. It's kind of cool. There's quite a few of these now. And the fact that the SoftBank Vision Fund is going to put, it's a $100 billion fund, but they're going to put a ton of money, as much as, this is hard to believe, $20 billion. I kind of understated it, didn't I? As much as $20 billion into WeWork, which is essentially that, turnkey office space. Wow. I guess I'm in the wrong business. The SoftBank Vision Fund was created by this big Japanese company, SoftBank, run by Masayoshi Son, who's considered a genius investor. And they had $100 billion to invest, but they're going to put like as much as a quarter of it into this one company, which the press bills a real estate giant. It's not, I guess it is real estate, right? They rent office space, furnish it, and then sublet it out to small companies. It's a big business. Kathy, Akron, Ohio, you're next. Hi, Kathy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I'm excited you're taking my call. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for calling.
I've been wanting to talk to you for a while. I have a small private hobby where I collect landscape photos, and I would really like to find a way to use my television as my digital frame.
Oh, how nice.
And because digital frames are usually kind of small. And
yeah, like let's have it on the big screen.
The pictures bounce out, but I don't know how to do that.
You know, it's funny because almost all now these internet-connected TV devices like the Roku and the Apple TV have screensavers that are often landscapes. Apple TV has a beautiful one. It's a slow motion landscapes. So they're moving because they're screensavers.
You know, I saw that on a TV yesterday.
It's gorgeous.
In a location that I figured it was probably built into the television.
But yeah, it comes with the Apple TV. It's awesome. So that would be one way to do it, is to get one of these devices. All of them have a photo capability. So for instance, the Apple TV, if you use a Macintosh, you'd upload your landscape pictures to your, you put them on your Apple Photos, and you could actually have a particular folder, let's call it my special landscape collection, and you'd say to your Apple TV, that's my screensaver.
How does it get from my iMac?
It's magic. No, through the through iCloud. It's through the internet. And that's the whole point, is that you are now, this is not the only way to do it. I'm going to tell you some other ways. But that's one way to do it. And the advantage of that is you can update it without having to do anything and just put new photos in the folder on your computer. And the way it works is you're using the iCloud photo library. So Apple, the Mac, is uploading all your photos to iCloud. It's cloud storage.
It does that now.
Yeah.
But what do I have to add to my television?
An Apple TV. It's called the Apple TV. And so the idea is that this is one way. I'm going to finish and tell you some other ways, but it's because this is going to cost you a little money because the Apple TV is a couple hundred bucks. But then the Apple TV lets you watch movies and TV and other stuff. You know, the idea is it makes an internet connected TV. So you connect the Apple TV to the internet, and now your TV is connected to the Apple TV, and you've added internet capability to your TV. Many TVs already have this. Does your TV have Netflix on it?
I think
I do.
Yeah, I do watch. We can get on and, you know, like do YouTube videos and stuff on it.
Okay. So it does already have internet. You might investigate if your television, look in the menu and see what apps it offers. It might already have a photo app, in which case you'd have to just figure out how to get photos to that photo app. Lots of TVs have slots for photo cards, for SD cards. So that'd be another way to do it, requiring no internet. You copy the photos you want onto an SD card, a little memory card on your Mac. Slotted into the TV. You can buy, if your TV doesn't have that, you can buy little add-on devices that do that.
SD card.
Yeah, SD card reader onto your TV USB flash drive. It really depends on the television and the capabilities of the TV. But many TVs can do a slideshow if you put a photo folder in that SD card slot or on the USB port. But again, you'd have to check to make sure yours would do that. The nice thing about the Apple TV is it will work with any TV that has an HDMI port. Roku will do the same thing, but it doesn't use Apple's photo sharing service. You'd use some other one. Amazon has those Amazon Fire TVs use Amazon Photos, and you could put Amazon Photos in your Mac and put the photos in that and then have them up on your Amazon TV as well. Lots of ways to do this. Because what you want to do is very common. I see my family photos as a screensaver, for instance, on my television. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be great, too.
So you could do that with Roku, with Apple TV, probably your own existing TV capabilities. There are lots of ways to do it. And you're right. It'd be a great way to use those landscape photos.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. And if you have an Apple TV, I stopped putting my family photos on there because the normal default screensaver, which they call Arial, is stunning. They have aerial photography in super slow-mo, and it just rotates through everything from the urban landscapes of Dubai to overhead for LAX to the lush jungles of Hawaii. It's kind of like that opening shot of Jurassic Park. You know, I almost want to play the Jurassic Park theme as they zoom down that valley. But they do it very slowly because it's a screensaver and they want to change it, but they don't want to change it dramatically or it draws the eye. So it's just beautiful. And if you have your Apple TV set up with a nice big screen, that's gorgeous. Hey, we're out of time. I hate it when that happens. Will you come back next week? We have lots more to talk about. By then, I'll have the new Google phone. I can talk about that. Thanks to Michael Cozio. He makes that music so great, doesn't he? He's our musical director. He's the guy with the baton and the tails. Thanks to Kim Schaffer for answering the phone. Most of all, thanks to you for joining me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.